Broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. To you.
Made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below that below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemy of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equality.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. I am Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up. Get up. Get to me. My goodness gracious. We have much, 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 much to talk about. This is going to be a full morning. We're going to talk to and talk about a number of different things. In the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Irene J. Smith. She's going to be joining me for Eye on the Loop. And please don't forget, put it on your calendar tomorrow or Saturday. The very first Saturday morning Urban Institute. That's Irene and I. We put together this. It's kind of a forum, kind of a think tank, kind of a workshop, all of that and so much more. Every Saturday morning, starting this Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 at the Firehouse. That's on Taylor, right off of Taylor and Del Mar, Taylor and Del Mar. You can get there from there, and that's 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. It's going to be wonderful. We're going to have a discussion. Our first discussion is, what are you going to be looking for in an elected official? What should we be looking for? What should we evaluate? How do we go about evaluating it? We're going to get a historical perspective from Senator Bass. Also, Senator Maida Coleman is going to be joining us as well to participate in the conversation. So there will be a continental breakfast served. You don't want to miss this. You can bring your kids, bring the conversation. We need to get some work done. And this is the way to do it, the Saturday Morning Urban Institute, Irene and I. Every Saturday morning. And as we progress through this, we're going to be showing films. We're going to be talking about books. It's going to be an amazing thing. And I know you all want to be part of it. So this Saturday at 9 a.m., put it on your calendar at the firehouse, right there at Taylor and Del Mar. My name is Liz Brown. We have much to talk about. This morning we're going to, again, talk with Irene J. Smith as on Eye in the Loop. We have some breaking news on the Senate race that is going on. Some breaking news, some disturbing news, really, coming from one of the candidates on, you know, that's the race that involves Yaphet El Amin, that involves Amber Boykins, that involves Jeff Smith, that involves Kenny Jones and Gambaro. Mm-hmm. And we have some interesting and disturbing news coming out about one of the candidates, Jeff Smith. We're going to be talking about that in the next hour. I'm interested to get your take on this. I was disturbed by this information. So that's going to be in the 7 o'clock hour. Then in the 8 o'clock hour, Justice for Reggie, and we're going to be having a minister's round table discussion. Justice for Reggie is the time that we talk about the death penalty through the case of Reginald Clemens. And many times people call up and say, you know, I believe in the death penalty. I'm old school. You know, the Bible says eye for an eye. Well, we're going to have a minister's roundtable to discuss the very simple question. Is there wiggle room in thou shalt not kill? Is there wiggle room? I'm a lawyer. I look at it. I'm a former defense attorney. I'm used to finding wiggle room. I don't see any in that, but I'm not a minister. So we're going to have a discussion with some ministers, a minister's roundtable. Is there wiggle room in the thou shalt not kill? And then tomorrow from 7 until 9, we're going to be taking a look black and brown at the world. Cuba, Zimbabwe, Ghana. Minister Akbar Muhammad is going to join me tomorrow. We're going to have a number of officials from those countries to talk to us about what is going on in those countries, what we should be looking at the world, how we should be looking at the world, black and brown. That's tomorrow. You don't want to miss that. Oh, busy, busy, busy times, busy days. So fasten your seatbelt. Let's get started. I want to talk about, since we're going to be doing a little bit of God this morning, since we're going to be doing a little bit of assessing God this morning, I want to talk about Republicans. Huh? How'd you get to that? Huh? Well, here's how I got to that. The Republicans would claim that it was those that are involved in religion that got him in office. The religious right. In fact, I can even name a specific name, Randy Brinson. He's a staunch Republican, a devout Baptist. He's a doctor. And he, I think he would feel comfortable in saying, you know, I'm one of the reasons why George Bush got elected. Because he put together the redeem the vote. That's good, isn't it? Redeem the vote. Those nasty, dirty old Clintons and Democrats, blue dress, lying, so-and-sos. We need to redeem the vote. That's clever. Put together a redeem the vote initiative. And they're saying that it was his redeem the vote that helped persuade 25 million people to turn out for Bush. But there's trouble, I guess, in the Holy Land. His wife is receiving threats from anonymous conservative activists warning her husband to stay away from politics. Huh? Huh? How could that, huh? What the, huh? A good Christian is getting threats from other conservatives to stay out of politics? They're calling my house, threatening my wife. The first time was on a day I was going up to Washington to speak to Republicans in Congress. Only they knew I'd be away from my home. The Republicans were advised not to turn up to listen to me, so only three did. Why are they mad at him? Because he has questioned the partisan tactics of the religious right. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Are we going to have a throwdown in the Christian right? Going to be a throwdown? Huh? He's questioning he dares to question God's word, apparently. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You are wearing 666. No, you're wearing 666. How do you fight that battle? What kind of names do you call each other? You're 666. No, you're 666. Huh? Conservatives speak in tones that they've got power and they can do what they want. Only 23% of the population embraces those positions, but if someone questions their mandate or wants to articulate a different cause for the moderate right, they are totally ridiculed, baby. Who let the dogs out? Huh? How long have I been saying who let the dogs out? Y'all get mad when you let the dogs out, when you say, Jesus sent me a message to go and kill innocent Iraqis. Oh, y'all were cool with that. I didn't hear anything on that. Jesus said, tax cuts for the wealthy. Y'all were cool with that. Jesus said, move people to Guantanamo. Take them away from the courts. Don't answer any questions about them. And call them detainees and treat them and do anything you want to them. Jesus said that. Jesus said, after the pictures of Abu Ghraib came out, Jesus said, why don't y'all get together and write a memo saying there's nothing wrong with torture? I didn't hear Jesus complain when he was on the cross, did he? That's how twisted and sick these people are. That's how twisted and sick these people are. I don't know. I'm not a biblical scholar. And I don't mean to offend anybody. But if Jesus is a road dog of Dick Cheney, y'all need to think about the book. if he's a road dog saying, good job, Dick Cheney, y'all need to be scared. And you need to come up with another name for the good book. If that is so. The conservatives, the Christian conservatives. Now, you know, a blue dress offends me, but electrobes and black hoods, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. They're eating their own, and the those that are being eaten by the Christian conservatives are saying, we've got to stop them. Who let the dogs out? Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen? Who let the dogs out? In his office in Washington, D.C., Rich Cizik, the vice president of the National Association of Evangelicals, the largest such umbrella group in the U.S., he's also feeling battered. His mistake has to become interested in the environment, and he has been told that that is not on the religious rights agenda. Who let the dogs out, y'all? Mr. Cizik is an ordained minister of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. He's an impeccably conservative on social issues such as abortion, stem cell research, and homosexuality. He believes that the concern for the environment arises from biblical injunctions about the stewardship of the earth. Hallelujah. I'm just trying to ask the question. If you preach, if you advocate, if you stand silent in the midst of intolerance, why are you surprised that intolerance is now directed towards you? These folks can't hold their belly in. These folks can't hold. A cop who is beating a suspect, a human being, senseless. A cop who lies on his police report. A cop that verbally abuses people. He doesn't go home and act like a choir boy. He goes home and he verbally abuses his family. He beats his family. Or he engages in some kind of abusive behavior. You cannot hold your belly in as to who you are. If you are part of an administrative policy that is fundamentally, at its core, about intolerance, we don't have to listen to stinking anybody. We can do what we doggone want to. We want. It's ours. We run this stuff. Shut up. Sit down. And I don't want to hear from you anymore. You're surprised that those intolerant people have turned on you? Shoo. They've been turned on you. You just now feeling it. You ain't never been part of it. You just now feeling it. You surprised? Shoot. Who let the dogs out? We're taking a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
Waiting to bloom like a light bulb in a dark room. I'm just sitting here.
to register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
Listen very closely to the music of the night. The music of the most spellbinding experience in theater history. The music of the Phantom of the Opera. Now you are invited to fall captive to all the music, the power, and the passion. The Phantom of the Opera, the phenomenon that has captivated millions the world over, returns to the Fox Theater in the U.S. Bank Broadway series June 7th through July 1st. Get tickets at the Fox box office, all MetroTix outlets, MetroTix.com, or call 314-534-1111. Welcomed by American Airlines. There's only one Phantom, and you've waited long enough.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
32 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a quick look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Midas. Trust Midas. Eastbound 44 at Bolton 270. Looks good. Northbound 55 at Richardson 270 is on route. Northbound 270 at 44 is pulling freely. Eastbound 40 between Boone Bridge and 270. Expect no delays. Eastbound 70 from State Springs to Atlanta. Bridge looks good. Westbound 270 from 367 to 170 is on the move. Westbound 5570, westbound 64, and northbound Route 3 approaches on the Poplar Street Bridge are looking good, and westbound 2 bridge traffic, no delays there. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Midas. Trust the Midas touch. What's the most important safety feature on your car? Midas believes it's the person who does your brakes. Don't trust your brakes to just anyone. Trust America's leader in brakes. Trust the Midas touch. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday, showers and thunderstorms likely today with a high around 80. For this evening, mostly cloudy in the evening, partly cloudy overnight, a 40% chance of showers this evening with a low around 60. Friday and Saturday look pretty much the same, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. Currently, we have 68 degrees under cloudy skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Tip, this is Pastor Ray Higgins, and I would like to invite you to tune in to the On One Accord broadcast every Sunday morning from 6 to 8:30 a.m. for the best in liberated gospel music, live talk radio, and powerful messages about truth and right spirituality. Join me right here on WGNU 920 a.m. every Sunday morning from 6 to 8:30 a.m. and let's set our people free. Hotep.
For the issues that matter most to you, of course, it's AM 920 WGNU. This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA.
The St. Louis Rams will host the 10th annual Bowl-a-Rama to benefit the Epilepsy Foundation of the St. Louis region on Monday, June 5th at Tropicana Lanes. Rams players will bowl with the participants from 7 to 8 p.m., with the Rams offense taking on the Rams defense at 8:30. Tickets are $100 to bowl with the Rams or $75 to observe. For more info, call 314-645-6969. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in after the 5 o'clock news every Friday for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to, and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage on your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons after the 5 o'clock news on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
Professor Stephen Yates of the University of South Carolina is our guest Tuesday morning at 7. He recently wrote a disturbing dissertation on a plan the Bush administration is pushing to merge Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. into a single regional government, or a Western version of the European Union. It would create a huge free trade zone that would allow goods and people to move freely across borders, effectively doing away with domestic citizenship. How would such different political systems work as one entity? Some points to ponder Tuesday morning at 7 with Professor Stephen Yates, right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Walking around like I'm made out of diamonds. I tripped and fell and it reminded me to move over and let my angels guide me. Ooh, you're going too fast. You got your hands in the air with your feet on the gas. You're about to wreck your future, running from the past. You need to slow down.
Slow down, baby. Slow down, baby. My name is Liz Brown, 1-877-920-WGNU. There is a fundraiser tonight in honor of candidate for State Senator Kenneth Jones. The reception's from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Postal Workers Union Hall, 1717 South Broadway. You can phone for more information, 385-6663, 385-6663. And you can, again, the fundraiser is tonight from 5 to 8 p.m. And give a phone call to 385-6663. My name is Liz Brown. Don't forget, in the next hour, Irene J. Smith. We are going to be talking about Eye on the Loo. We're going to be talking about the fourth senatorial election. We're going to do a little bit of update on the new bill, voter ID. Bill Carnahan has written a letter to the governor. We're going to give you an update on that. She did that yesterday. We're going to be talking about Jeff Smith in this race. Some disturbing news out of that fourth senatorial race. You don't want to miss that. And then in the 8 o'clock hour with Justice for Reggie, we're going to be doing a round table discussion, minister's round table, a pastor's round table. And we're going to engage in the discussion. Is there wiggle room in thou shalt not kill? Don't want to miss that. You don't want to miss that. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask you, let me make this announcement about Ms. Bernice Buller's funeral arrangements. She was a longtime teacher, 40 years or more, at Dunbar School, and her wake will be today at St. Peter's on Margaretta and Shreve from 4 to 7 p.m., and her funeral will be there tomorrow at the same place, St. Peter's, at 11 a.m. She was a longtime teacher. She worked with the Y. She worked with Harris Stowe before it became Harris Stowe and afterwards. And so I just wanted all the people who may not have known that she has passed away.
All right now.
Thank you so much.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Yep. The religious right, they're fighting, they're eating their own. They are eating their own. Judge Roy Moore, he was unseated. You remember him. He was unseated as Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. Why? Because he refused to remove the 5-ton monument that had carved into it the Ten Commandments. He's campaigning in the state's primary to get rid of the Republican governor. He told people in the town of Enterprise, Alabama, the Guardian America was falling into godlessness. That's it. We're going the same way England is now, without God. Is it true that Islam is taking over there? Huh. The decision that they're in right now, the place that they're in right now, is only Christians are capable of moral decision. Brother Richard Emmett, in his Mothering Sunday sermon, as he talked to audiences in the eastern part of Tennessee, he said, this is what he said. And remember, the topic is mothering. I would rather put my .38 pistol in a child's room than put a computer or a television set there. Wow. Now, there is a sense that of some of the evangelists and of course they're using something that Brother Emmett reviles so much, they may have overreached themselves. Jerry Falwell, the founder of the Moral Majority, Pat Robertson, have embarrassed their followers by actives such as blaming the terrorist acts on September 11th on pagans and abortionists, feminists, gays, lesbians, and the secularization of America. Oh, by the way, in case you haven't heard, Pat Robertson claims to have bench pressed with his legs 2,000 pounds. I don't know of a weight machine that has a 2,000-pound weight on it. And also, don't forget James Dobson of Focus on the Family. He broadcasts daily to the nation from Colorado Springs. And he has moved to a particularly and an increasingly partisan stance. He endorsed Bush in 2004. He threw his weight behind Harriet Meyer's disastrous candidacy. And Dobson is one of the people that are saying, you do not bring the environment into this discussion. He's one of the people that they're saying is that his mindset, his group, his people are behind the threats against the other evangelicals? A 2004 exit poll showed that 78% of white evangelicals voted for Bush, and they were 23% of the overall electorate. Whether a person, the Pew Forum found that whether a person regularly attends church or synagogue or mosque was more important in determining his or her vote for president than such demographic characteristics as gender, age, income, and religion. And it is just as important as race. They're fighting, y'all. They're fighting amongst each other. The religious right got Bush elected, and now they're fighting each other. Who let the dogs out? My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Doing a break here. Don't worry, we'll be back. Stay with me.
Today, ran from the noise, ran away. Don't want to go back to that place, but don't have no choice, no way. It ain't easy growing up in World War III. Never know.
Mall to visit your Sears, why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else are you going to get washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves? Where else are you going to get the best deals? Where else are you going to go in the city of St. Louis to shop for those things? Sears, right there at Union and Natural Bridge. The best customer service, the best deals, the best products, all at Sears. So here's
here's the deal. When you go shopping, you need to drive on over to Union and Natural Bridge, get your shop on. I'm Liz Brown. Tell them I told you to.
Time again to register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
Hi, this is Lethea Owens with a Motivational Moment. I'd like to encourage you to find out who you are and be it on purpose without apology. I believe that there is great power and influence when we know who we are. When we understand the gifts and talents that we possess, we're able to make a strong and powerful impact on the world around us. So please join me on Mondays from 1 to 2 for Motivational Mondays, where your dreams become reality on AM 920 WGNU.
This is George Cotton.
And this is Syl Wilson.
We're your co-hosts for The Real Deal with George and Syl.
Every Tuesday night from 8 to 10 p.m.
Tune us in for thought-provoking and challenging conversation.
That's right. Count on informative dialogue, guaranteed controversy between George and I, and even a little humor.
That's right. The Real Deal with George and Syl. Every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 o'clock p.m. Tune us in. Spread the word, and we guarantee you'll love the show. See you then.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Tehran. Iranian officials say an unmanned reconnaissance plane circled over an American aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf on Tuesday before it returned to its base. The Iranian Fars news agency says the drone flew over the USS Ronald Reagan for about half an hour before American fighter planes were scrambled to intercept it, but by that time the plane was back in Iranian airspace. And Dateline Washington. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says that it is necessary in the fight against terrorism to have internet service providers save the records of all their customers' online activities. That statement was made during a meeting he had last week with executives from Comcast, Google, AOL, Microsoft, and Verizon. He said ISPs should save all data on customers for at least 2 years. Last month, Gonzalez's position was that records should be kept to fight child pornography, but he's now expanded that to include terrorism. The Justice Department is believed to be considering a mandate that would require providers to keep track of anyone who writes an email or does instant messaging and keep logs on all internet phone calls. Right now, ISPs delete any log file no longer needed for billing purposes and only hold on to such information at the request of police agencies who are doing an investigation. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
Hello, St. Louis. It's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy, inviting you to join us for the Travel Planner Show every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4.
We talk travel, share our experiences, tell you about some great deals and steals, and give you some travel tips like this.
We always cross-pack at least one change of clothes in each other's bag, just in case a bag gets lost.
Plus, it sure does give the security guys a good laugh when they see those little panties in my bag.
So tell a friend, it's the Travel Planner Show from 2 to 4 every Saturday afternoon
on Radio Free St. Louis, 920 WGNU.
This is Alan Brainerd inviting you to join me every Wednesday for Design 411. Whether you live in a mansion or a studio apartment, my guests and I will share new and exciting ways to make your home truly attractive. Please join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411. Wednesdays at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where you'll get the 411 on the things that matter most to you.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you Christmas tree. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you marriage ring and a pomegranate too.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in health care providers, and we at Connect Care want you to know that sometimes change can be good. Connect Care, still connected to the community. Connect Care is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of Connect Care's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At Connect Care, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your health care needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic.
At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Recently declassified documents indicate Iraq was not the first time American intelligence dropped the ball. India had been working on nuclear activity since the 1950s, and the CIA had been monitoring them. But when India tested bombs in 1974 and again in 1988, the U.S. had no idea they were about to be detonated. Jeffrey Richelson, senior fellow with the National Security Archive Institute, has authored a new book based on recently declassified intelligence documents. It's called Spying on the Bomb, American Intelligence from Nazi Germany to Iran and North Korea. And he'll join us Thursday morning at 9 for a revealing insight into the intelligence community. Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
I know I'm praying for much too much, but could you send the only man she loved? I know you don't do it usually, but dear Lord, she's dying to dance with my father. Every night I fall asleep, and this is all I ever dream.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. So much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get up, get up, get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz. As always, your program is always informative and interesting.
Thank you so much, Zenobia.
How are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm happy to be off, so I have an opportunity to call in.
All right.
I can listen all the time, but I'm on the go, and it's not always convenient, you know, to call in and respond. But you were talking about an issue this morning that, you know, I really felt compelled to respond to, and that's the religious right. And you were bringing up some facts and interesting that how the religious right overwhelmingly supports George Bush.
Correct.
78%. And very interestingly, part of the Republican strategy to keep the White House included a certain percentage of the religious right of our Christian fundamentalists in the African American community going over for Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And that did happen. They increased a black Republican vote from 8% to 9% to about 11% in 2004, which was very decisive in Ohio.
No, it's really hard to tell what was decisive in Ohio with all of the stolen votes that were there.
Yeah, that's also a factor, you
mm-hmm.
know, with the votes that were stolen.
Mm-hmm.
But in some key places, and you know, look at it, and other folks have been looking at it, and it seems to be part of the picture, is that in a lot of places, Bush bumped up the Republican African-American vote by 2 or 3%, you know, from 8 to, say, 11%, okay? Now, that played significantly in his numbers. I felt that we were in trouble when I ran into an African-American lady who told me that she voted for Bush because she saw a picture of him praying.
I guess I would like to have a whole lot of other conversations with someone like that. I'm not doubting that she said that, but I would like to have a conversation with someone like that about, do you vote all the time? Are you engaged in the voting process? Maybe she was a first-time voter. You know what I'm saying? I think that, I guess my concern is evaluating what that means, because I think that you're correct in raising this issue. We do need to raise it, and we also need to get to what it means. And I don't know. I'd like to talk to a whole lot of people that voted, black folks that voted like that, and ask them a whole lot more questions.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, and you know, and I understand, you know, what you're saying. It's just, you know, it's a trend, a phenomenon that's being exposed before us, and how does it impact in terms of our political decisions, in terms of where we are and where we go?
And you raised the right question. It's a trend, and we've got to figure out what is the trend.
Yes, yes. But I say this also, that whatever discussion that takes place in, you know, in terms of what we see before us and how it translates to where we need to go, is that we do this with love and unity and understanding, and to bring folks to an understanding of where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I see this because I hear, you know, people that I love, I have a lot of respect for, who paved the way for me getting involved in right-wing fundamentalist issues that put them on this path for voting for Republicans. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that concerns me. That concerns me that you're so concerned about whether or not gay marriage is banned versus someone getting Medicaid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So these issues, but I have faith.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm going to have to let you go, but Irene and I are going to be starting a Saturday morning.
I wanted to mention that. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I was just going to say, you know, and sometimes I don't call in because you can't include all that you feel you need to, and I understand that, but I was listening about your forum coming up on Saturdays, and I think this sounds great, and I wanted to say that if I had time also.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay.
That's the Saturday Morning Urban Institute. That's Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. at the Firehouse. That's the Black Firefighters Association's. They're building. They're on Taylor and Del Mar. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Yes, Liz. You know, two out of three people say that if the economy is good, they are not feeling it. They are being squeezed. Living costs are rising faster than their income. Two out of three. That's catastrophic for a party in power. 89% say that their life is worse the last 5 years. You know, Bush and Cheney do believe in the golden rule. The man with the gold makes the rules, and certainly Secretary Rice, with her gunfight at the OK Corral ultimatums. One thing was, Bush and Cheney would have solved all our problems had they been in during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
All right.
The world would have been destroyed, and we would be dead.
All right. 454-0400 is my phone number. Martha.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding.
Very good. That the latest, the sister's going to have the forum tomorrow, something that we need, and hope that everybody can come out, and we will be learning something.
The forum that I was just talking about?
Yeah.
That's on Saturday.
What's tomorrow? I'm getting my
tomorrow
days mixed
is Friday.
Up.
Tomorrow is Friday.
Okay, from the holidays.
Okay.
Saturday morning. And also, I want to hope that my alderman is listening, because the old McBride School, the developers want to come up there and put 30 families in that school. So I want my alderman troop to get on that. We don't need that in our neighborhood.
Okay.
30 families in a school.
Okay.
Old McBride.
All right.
Thank you.
Next hour, Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me. So much, so much, so much more coming at you.
Do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will make
ever say that progress is being made? If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the below, that the below made.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. This is every parent's nightmare. Your child is killed in a car crash. Now you compound it. You find out weeks later that your daughter, the one you thought you buried, is still alive. It's happened in Indiana. ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey explains.
It is a tragic case of mistaken identity.
There are things we wish we had done differently.
Coroner Ron Mowry in Grant County, Indiana, where Whitney Cirac was erroneously identified as her friend, Laura Van Rine, who actually died in the crash. But for 5 weeks, their families didn't know that. One mourned a death, the other sat by a hospital bedside, unknowingly, each for the daughters of the other. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
This is June 1st. It's the start of the Atlantic hurricane season, and forecasters are warning us that this one could be almost as bad as last year's. Florida is trying to stay a step ahead of whatever Mother Nature is ready to dish out. ABC's Donna Rapano joins us live from Miami.
Well, we have some thunderstorms on Miami Beach this morning. Still, it's calm compared to damaging winds hurricanes bring with them. While native Floridians prepare for, then take the storms in stride, out-of-towners like this New Yorker tend to stress out a little more.
Yes, I am. Scared. If it hits us pretty bad, I will be planning to go up north. I won't be even here to wait for it or even see it.
The National Hurricane Center expects a very busy hurricane season with up to 6 major storms. Daria?
ABC's Donna Rapato live in Miami. The top commander in Iraq is ordering all U.S. troops there to undergo core values training with an emphasis on the humane treatment of civilians and an understanding of the Iraqi culture. Army General George Casey's decision comes as the Pentagon looks into claims of unprovoked killings by Marines in the town of Haditha. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says it's up to Iran now. She's in Vienna working on a package that would provide Tehran with economic incentives if it stops enriching uranium. This is ABC News.
There are infinite dynamics in business. For instance, the just-in-time inventory that really is dynamic. Or the every SKU already has a customer dynamic. Or the I've escaped from the crushing shackles of my supply chain dynamic. How do you achieve these kinds of dynamics? Microsoft Dynamics. Software solutions that are specially designed to improve customer relationship, financial, and supply chain management. To find out more, visit Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics.
Nice shot! Time out!
Basketball's fun, but I need a cold drink.
My mom's making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ovaltine? Let's go!
I guess the kids will be home soon.
Let's make rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Come on! Sarah's mom's making
rich chocolate Ovaltine.
All right!
My kids love Ovaltine's rich chocolate taste.
And I love all those vitamins and minerals that you won't find in Nesquik powder.
Mom, we're back!
Who wants Ovaltine?
We do!
We better make more.
More Ovaltine, please!
The top commander in Iraq is ordering U.S. troops there to undergo core values training, an emphasis on humane treatment of civilians and an understanding of the Iraqi culture. A comic book company is giving one of its characters a new lease on life, not to mention a different point of view. Here's ABC's Dave Schreiber.
First, she came out of the cave. Now, Batwoman is coming out of the closet. DC Comics has announced the classic comic book character is being brought back in July as a lesbian. Batwoman will be a 5'10" superhero. She will come complete with flowing red hair, knee-high red boots, and spiked heels, along with a form-fitting black outfit. The original Batwoman first showed up in 1956. She was killed off in 1979. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
A New York man has been arrested for allegedly posing as a U.S. Marshal in an attempt to get girlfriends. Real Marshals arrested Richard Kudlick at his home yesterday after several angry women revealed his true identity on a website. Turns out the guy's a maintenance man who's been married 17 years. Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, an EMT and a paramedic are recovering from injuries they suffered when their ambulance overturned last night. Authorities say a car ran a red light near St. Louis Police Headquarters downtown and hit the ambulance. The ambulance flipped and struck a parked police car. The driver of the car was taken into custody. The paramedic and EMT are hospitalized in stable condition. The ambulance wasn't carrying any patients. The Praxair facility that was the scene of a massive fire and explosion last summer will officially be closed by next week. Praxair officials yesterday burned off several canisters filled with propane and propylene that were damaged in the fire. Company spokesman Nigel Moore says everything went well, and now that the tanks have been burned off, everything will be moved off the site. He says they're still searching for a buyer for the Choteau Avenue facility and are looking at a couple of places for a new location. The Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests wants a sit-down meeting with Belleville Bishop Edward Braxton. Barbara Doris, the victim outreach coordinator for SNAP, says they're hoping they can work out an arrangement that would protect children from admitted child molester Rial Bork.
That we can find a way to protect the children in Belleville, that we find a situation where we can put Bork in a secure facility. So we'd like to sit down and iron out the details of this.
Bork has admitted to molesting children in Maine and Massachusetts. He's been living in the Belleville Diocese since July 2002. Dora says she understands that SNAP and the diocese see things differently, but everyone involved would benefit from a face-to-face meeting. Finally this hour, Secretary of State Robin Carnahan wants Governor Matt Blunt to call lawmakers back to work. Carnahan says a special session is needed in order to provide funding for a bill creating a photo ID requirement at the polls. Carnahan, who opposed the bill, says there isn't enough funding designated to cover the cost of putting the new requirement into effect for the November election. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Sears. The weekly ad from Sears is now available online. Just go to Sears.com and click on their weekly ad for hundreds of great offers. The weekly ad at Sears.com. It's too many offers to fit in print. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by MoDOT's I-44 Travel Safe Partnership. Eastbound 70 at Cave Springs and Zumbel, that accident's been cleared to the right shoulder, but there's still slow going around 370. Westbound 70 at Earth City Expressway, there's an accident. Westbound 70 at Zumbel, there's a disabled truck partially blocking left lane. Eastbound 44 from Chrysler to Merrimack River Bridge looks good. Northbound 55 at 141 in Lindbergh, no problems there. Northbound 270 is heavy at either side of 44. Eastbound 40 from Long Road to Chesterfield Parkway, expect normal traffic. Eastbound 70 from K to T.R. Hughes, stop and go traffic going on there. Westbound 270 from West Florissant to Graham Hanley, look for a little bit of a slowdown. Westbound 5570, westbound 64, and northbound Route 3 approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge are looking slow this hour. And westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing, that traffic is building this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by MoDOT's I-44 Travel Safe Partnership. I-44 from Route 109 west of Pacific is a travel safe zone due to construction. Buckle up, pay attention, slow down. Tickets are issued on the I-44 safe zone because we want you to arrive alive. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Showers and thunderstorms likely today, high around 80. This evening, mostly cloudy in the evening, partly cloudy overnight, 40% chance of showers, lower in the lower 60s. Friday and Saturday, partly cloudy both days with a high in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 68 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 70, both under cloudy conditions. Stay tuned now. It's time for more of the award-winning Wake Up Call with your host, Liz Brown. She's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton. Stay tuned for Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown.
Recently declassified documents indicate Iraq was not the first time American intelligence dropped the ball. India had been working on nuclear activity since the 1950s, and the CIA had been monitoring them.
But when India tested bombs in 1974 and again in 1988, the U.S. had no idea they were about to be detonated. Jeffrey Richelson, senior fellow with the National Security Archive Institute, has authored a new book based on recently declassified intelligence documents. It's called Spying on the Bomb, American Intelligence from Nazi Germany to Iran and North Korea. And he'll join us Thursday morning at 9 for a revealing insight into the intelligence community.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen? To you.
Redistricting, hand-picked school board members, up-and-coming elections, recalls, battles in Jefferson City, knock-down dragouts at the Board of Aldermen. Who is who and what is what? That's what you get every Thursday at 7 a.m.
Welcome to Eye on the Loo. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. And because it's Thursday and it's 7 o'clock in the morning, it's time for Eye on the Loo. And I'm here this morning, of course, with Irene J. Smith. Irene, good morning.
Good morning, Liz, and your listening audience. And Martha West, the old McBride site is not in the first ward, it's in the 18th ward.
Okay, so let's get on with Eye on the Loo here.
You want to do Word on the Street first?
No, let's not do Word on the Street. That's something that
we all don't get to it.
We're not going to get to it yet. Let us get to the fourth senatorial race. We've talked about this, and we're going to continue to talk about this, Irene, because it is so important. And let's talk about the significance of this, particular senatorial district. Why is this such an important district, an important race?
Well, it's important because it provides representation in Jefferson City. But, of course, historically, up until Pat Doherty took over, it was presumed to be a seat that where we would have African-American representation. So it's real critical this year because we have three African-Americans running mm-hmm. for this seat, and we have Gambaro and, of course, Jeff Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So it's critical because the Senate seat, I mean, that's the prize. You can do so much more in the Senate. You can filibuster in the Senate. You get to name appointments to the various committees, and it provides a heck of a lot of representation. I mean, if we think about how effective Senator Banks was
mm-hmm.
when he was in the legislature and how powerful he was. So it's a very powerful position that could bring resources to our community and has great impact.
And, again, it's connected with the city of St. Louis, and that's why I think it is important. I know that it is important for us to do an examination of all of the candidates in here in this race. We've talked a bit about some of the issues with Yaphet El-Amin.
Yeah, but I just think we really talked about that from the standpoint of positions on legislation that
Absolutely.
We happen to be looking at, and folks' name popped up where we just didn't think that their name would pop up.
Yes, and again, but nevertheless, it's about the candidate and one of the things that you and the things that you use to evaluate the candidate, and that's why it's so important for people to come out this Saturday to the Saturday Morning Urban Institute, because we're going to have longer conversations about that and about how you evaluate people and what
exactly.
you look at, and
exactly.
that's what we were bringing to you are some of the things that this candidate who is a state rep now and wants a job promotion. So we were looking at what she was doing in her job. So now the challenge, the interesting thing about the senatorial race, Irene, is that all of the people that are running for this race, except for one, have legislative experience. We have Amber Boykins, who is being termed out. She's been a state rep for as long as you can in the state legislature, and she's now being termed out. We have Yaphet El-Amin, who's not being termed out, but she's been a legislator. We have Kenny Jones, who was an alderperson for 20-something years.
Exactly.
We have Gambaro, who was a
state
legislator. And then we have Jeff Smith, who's never been elected to any office and has never served in any kind of political capacity before.
Well, he has a degree in black studies, I believe.
That doesn't make you an elected official. Let's talk about it. I think that that we need to take some time to take a look at, just a little bit of a look right now, at Jeff Smith in this race. And the reason why we're talking about him today is, Irene, there was a very disturbing thing that took place. And this is kind of a breaking story here, so break it down for us.
You know, as you know, Jamila Nasheed is running in the 60th district for a state rep, and she was phone banking, and she received a response from a caller out of the 4th Ward that said she had been called by a pollster who was inquiring about the senatorial seat, the 4th senatorial seat, and was asked the question, would it make a difference, would the fact that Yaphet El-Amin was a Muslim make a difference in voting? Would that impact your voting?
And let's stop right there. Would it make the fact that Yaphet El-Amin is a Muslim make a difference? And that when you relayed this story to me, immediately what came to my mind were two words, push-pull. And I think for the benefit of the listening audience, let me give a quick definition of what a push-pull is. A push-pull is a political campaign technique in which an individual or an organization attempts to influence or alter the view of the respondents under the guise of conducting a poll. Push polls are generally viewed as a form of negative campaigning. Now, this was a question that was asked in the midst of another poll.
Right.
Okay, so it was kind of like a combo type of a thing. Do you think that this satisfies the definition of a push poll?
I think it does, and I'm going to tell you why, because that was not all that was asked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The other question that was asked is, Jamila Nasheed mm-hmm. is running for the 60th district. And the question was asked, do you think she has a chance of winning against Sharon Tyus?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, this is... Then they went on to talk about Jeff Smith. Did you know he'd done these things for children, da-da-da-da?
Okay, before we get to that, I guess let's back up a bit. Why did that question cause you to conclude that this is a push-pull? Why was that significant?
Because, first of all, the question was asked about Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jamila Nasheed is Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you asked this question kind of out of nowhere, in a way, if you
look
at it. Because it was talking about Jeff Smith, who's running for the 4th senatorial seat and not the 6th. So then
Wait a minute. Jeff Smith is running for a Senate seat. Jamila is running for a state rep seat.
Right. So there was no reason to mention her other than, in my opinion, other than the fact that she also is Muslim,
mm-hmm.
and there was trying to be a slam on Muslims that are running for office.
If not a slam,
but to let people know.
It also is a poll does a number of things. You know this. A poll determines whether or not, first of all, a candidate's out there trying to see how well their name is recognized.
Exactly.
A candidate is out there trying to inform the public about who they are. A candidate is out there trying to take the pulse of the community about them and the issues that matter to the community. And because if it's a push pull, one of the things that a push pull does is it also implants things in people's minds to behave in a way that you want them to behave. Or it could also, if you're polling people, if you're a Jeff Smith, okay, you've never been elected to anything, you're white, you're trying to get votes out of the black community, you want to find out, how do I get to penetrate into this community?
Right.
Let me find out about how black people feel about a lot of Muslims running for office, because if there is some softness there, then maybe that's where I can direct my energies to get me to be able to penetrate into this market, because I don't have the familiarity as the others do. I'm not black and I've never been elected to office.
Exactly. So it is certainly that, as you said, part of the phenomena, the theory of a push-pull is to implant,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times it's implanting things that are false. In this instance, of course, it was implanting something that is true. But what is interesting, as you and I talked about this on yesterday, what is interesting is, you know, you talk about the religious beliefs of your opponents, but what about you? Did you ask people, by the way, did you know Jeff Smith was Jewish? Would it impact your election if you knew that?
And you know what? It would have made more sense to ask that of a black community about whether or not I would suspect that the 99% of the people that live in the 4th Ward that are black are not Jewish.
Right.
And I would suspect that there's a larger number of Muslims that live in the 4th Ward than there are Jewish black people. So since you are Jewish, it seems to me that you should be asking that question. If religion is the issue that you want to get to, then why didn't you ask that question?
I think that the question was not answered is because, as you said, he was trying to determine a way to penetrate and impact if being Muslim was a negative,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some people are suggesting that it is. I don't happen to believe that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So then by him doing it this way, he was trying to get a read
mm-hmm.
to
exactly.
see
exactly.
If it mattered.
And if it could penetrate into
exactly.
that into that black market. And he's done a couple of things that, you know, some folks may not have a problem with, and some folks may. We're just bringing the information. You evaluate this. He's going to hold a fundraiser in the black community, and it's not a, you know, it's a basketball game, and they're serving barbecue at Fairground Park. You come to a black community, let me give them basketball, let me give them barbecue, and get them to get some money to support me for my candidacy.
Yeah. I mean, there are some people who say, well, you know, Jessamyn plays basketball, but why are you coming?
Mm-hmm. Your first time.
First time. You know, other than you're pushing charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you bring to our community is a basketball.
Watermelon and barbecue.
You know, rib tip, and a beer, you know. And maybe they're going to have some fried chicken, too.
Mm.
I don't know. But for many people that I heard talking about this, you know, some of the older people, they was like, what? He's running for the senatorial seat.
And he coming here to play basketball.
He coming to play basketball.
Or to watch black folks play basketball. Or to play basketball with black folks.
Yeah, I understand he's a pretty good basketball player.
Well, whatever. I mean, you know, that whatever. I mean, the issue here is, and I guess my concern about this, and maybe it wouldn't land in this way, Irene, if there hadn't been this negative Muslim push-pull thing.
Exactly.
Because, you know, that being the first salvo out there, I now have to suspect everything that is being done. And you have to, because you're supposed to evaluate these things. That is hugely problematic. And then we've got to tie it to this other piece, Irene, because we got to try to figure out who's what's what, who's doing what. I looked at Jeff Smith. We both looked at Jeff Smith's campaign disclosure. That's up on the Missouri Ethics website. And what I found fascinating is that one of the claims to fame of Jeff Smith is that he has this whole grassroots piece. And granted, there are over 100 individual contributions to his campaign. He has the biggest war chest of all of the candidates. He has over $101,000 in his campaign. But what is interesting is that when you look for the grassroots presence, because we're both attorneys, I was looking at it, that's an attorney. And so, you know, I can count. So we counted up, and the attorneys that gave money to this campaign, a little over 50 attorneys gave money, a little over 60, 70 people that are all listed as giving money. So 50, almost a fourth of the people that are giving money are attorneys. And you just have to evaluate people by the company they keep. Whose issues are going to be represented? Are they grassroots issues? And then we also have the charter school people.
Exactly.
The charter school people giving them money. And so I'm assuming, I would not be surprised to see, at least not to see an effort of All Children Matters trying to get to them, because their issues are the same.
Right.
Their issues are the same. So we have to try to evaluate people as best we can. So how do we evaluate Jeff Smith in light of this push-pull? Huh. And unlikely, and it doesn't immediately hop to mind, but an article in The World. We looked at this article, and you and I have talked about reading articles in The World, and sometimes just the things that they put in your spirit, you can't hold them in there because some of the stuff is just so ugly and so mean, and that's why a lot of people read it, because it's so nasty and it's so mean and disgusting. But there was an article, nasty, mean, and disgusting, in The World on the May 23rd to 30th article. And what's interesting is it was, without giving a lot of the details of it, because a lot of it I don't want to repeat because it's mean. It's mean.
And it's disgusting.
It's mean. But it talks about the issue of Yaphet El Amin and her husband. And they attack them. And one of the lines in it that I have to repeat simply because it is the Muslim piece. It starts out as an article talking about the issue of child support and Talib El Amin's child support issues. And then there's a line in there that says, the fact remains, and then jumps to a discussion of Yaphet. The fact remains, if she were a true Muslim woman, one would accept her as she is with long dresses and head wraps. She has shown apparent liberation, most likely at the public and white folks are threatened by her outfits. This is a comment on yap at how she wears her hair.
Exactly.
And the clothes that she wears, and the suggestion that because
And even though to a large extent Muslim women do wear hairpiece, it's also stereotypical.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's also a comment on, it's a reverse slam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a slam that she's wearing the headdress, it's a slam that she's not, therefore she is not a true Muslim woman. And therein rises, that comment raises the question of a discussion of what a true Muslim is, and if it should, and a determination of what a true Muslim is, whether it should come from the gossip column of the world.
I mean, as if the source would be the Evening World.
The Evening World of what a true Muslim is.
And which payola, in my estimation.
And that gets us to the next point. Why was there, we need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to raise the question of why was there this attack on Muslims and Muslims' name? Why did it come out at this time, and is there a connection between the push-pull of Jeff Smith and this article? We're going to talk about that when we come back. Stay with us. Travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears. Where else? Where else? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, you name it, they have it, and it's right in the city of St. Louis, the only Sears in the city of St. Louis. You need to get on down to Natural Bridge and Union and get your shop on. That's right. DVD players, television sets, high-end refrigerators. You have an apartment building, you need to stock them with some stoves or refrigerators, get on over to Sears. You'll get a great deal in doing so. I'm Liz Brown. When you get to Sears, tell them I told you to.
Time again to register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
Hi, I'm Gil, owner of Gil's Nursery and Landscaping, located at 1318 North Vanaventer. We want to help you beautify your lawns and gardens by offering you an assortment of bedding plants, trees, and shrubs, and bulk materials such as mulch, gravel, rock, and sand. For you pet lovers, we also carry a wide variety of diamond dog food and other pet supplies. Our store hours are Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. Stop by. We're at the corner of Vanaventer and Evans, or call 534-9446.
Hi, I'm Carrie Verschel.
And I'm Elaine Adams.
Join us here in the ladies' room every Tuesday and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. An exclusive format for ladies with challenging, insightful, objective, and thought-provoking topics.
The ladies' room. It's time to revive, restore, renew, rejuvenate, and refresh, where there's always something to talk about.
So join us in the ladies' room.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you.
32 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by TomTom. Eastbound 70, Edmund Rivers and Cave Springs. Slow traffic due to an earlier accident. Westbound 70 at Earth City Expressway. That accident's cleared, but there's still traffic and it's slow in the right lane all the way from the ramp from northbound 270. Westbound 70 at Dumbbell, there's disabled truck partially blocking left lane. Eastbound 70 at Hawk's Nest overpass, disabled truck partially blocking the right lane. Eastbound 44 at 141 and Merrimack River, no problems there. Northbound 270 at Gravoy all the way to 44, heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason, look for heavy volume there as well. Eastbound 70 from K to Hughes, look for slow traffic going on there. Westbound 5570, westbound 64, and northbound Route 3 approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge, expect delay, as well as westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank to the Queens Landing. There'll be delays there as well. Telegraph at Baumgartner, there's an injury accident. Two southbound lanes are blocked, and vehicles are getting by with little backup. TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen, and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, showers, thunderstorms likely, high around 80. This evening, mostly cloudy in the evening, 40% chance of showers, becoming partly cloudy overnight, low in the lower 60s. Friday and Saturday, partly cloudy skies on both days, highs in the mid-60s. to lower 80s in both days as well. Currently, we have 69 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 71. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown will return with Eye on the Lou. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Hi, I'm Vicki Pimentel, inviting you to join me right here on WGNU 920 AM on Friday nights for a little sports talk. We'll drop the gloves, scuffle a bit, and in the end, line up and shake hands. Yeah, right.
Next, on Mondays at 9, we take a look at the Federal Reserve System, the only institution on the planet that allows banks to create money out of nothing, then turn around and make money on that nothing money when they lend it. The Fed lets the government borrow unlimited amounts of cash with no plan or intent for repayment. It's been called the greatest ripoff since Jesse James. Financial and investment counselor Roland Manarin exposes the Federal Reserve System for what it is, but also describes how you can take this new knowledge and work it for your own financial benefit on the next edition of Mondays at 9. Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Eye on the Lou. I'm Liz Brown. Before we get back into our discussion, I just want to let everybody know that there is a fundraiser and a reception in honor of a Kenny Jones tonight from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Postal Workers Union Hall, 1717 South Broadway. And if you want more information, 385-6663. That is tonight from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Postal Workers Union Hall, 1717 South Broadway. And, Irene, we're talking about, coincidentally, we're talking about that same race and Jeff Smith and the connection and his push-pull and the connection with this article, or this gossip piece in the world. What kind of connections can we make with that? Because it seems like those two would be unrelated. What's the connection?
It seems they would be unrelated, but when you factor in the fact that first this push-pull happened, mm-hmm. and then it's like...
And the push-pull where Jeff Smith went out there, and part of his push-pull was asking people, does it matter that Yaphet El Amin is Muslim.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you have this piece that purports to talk, but we're going to talk about child support, but that's not what it's really about. Mm-hmm. It's a slam in that regard, but it's also a slam on Muslims again, mm-hmm. you know, and putting more information out there about Muslims from a negative perspective and tying it into something negative with mm-hmm. the child support issue. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's coincidental, you know, from the way that I've looked at the world and I've looked at it all of my life, you know, it's the paper that's passed around in our community. I looked at it during my election when they slam. And basically, you look at mm-hmm. how Francis Lay, every 3 weeks he's in the world, they're being paid mm-hmm. to do that. You know, it's my belief that this was intentionally mm-hmm. and that there was some money that changed hands for this to take place.
And it's part of the campaign to, it appears to be, part of a campaign to soften or diminish support for the black candidates that are running.
Exactly.
And this black candidate in particular in North St. Louis. And we have to ask the question of who gains advantage with that. When you talk about the Francis Slay pictures in there, we need to be clear on that. We're talking about favorable pictures of Francis Slay. It appears to be a tool that Francis Slay gets his picture into what he perceives to be the black community. And so let us backtrack, take another step back. Who is the supporter of Jeff Smith?
Francis Slay.
Like on Jeff Smith's website, he has pictures of his one of his first fundraisers, and it's a fundraiser given by the Slays. So is there a coincidence between charter schools, the privatization of our schools, Francis Slay, and Jeff Smith and his positioning?
And Liz, we were talking about this during the break. I mean, he is particularly dangerous to me.
Jeff Smith is.
And when I think of Jeff Smith, to a large extent, I think of Sam Brownback, and that's the ultra-conservative right-wing Republican who belongs to a lot of secret sales. Because Jeff Smith, very approachable guy, you know, young, gentle, you know, I majored in black studies. But when you look at the things that he talks about, you know, it's very destructive to our community and particularly to the public school system. Mm-hmm. And then you look at someone who would sanction a push poll
on Muslims,
it is my understanding that he is Jewish. Mm-hmm. That's particularly disturbing because what you are doing, you're seeking to divide our community in a very, you know, on the kind of down low, but it's vicious.
Throw the rock, hide the hand. And we have Minister Akbar Muhammad on the line. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
How are you?
Okay, Liz, I'm listening to this conversation. And first I want to say that I just love lawyers' analytical mind, especially to tie in the push poll in the article in The World and who are they supporting and the favorable pitches that they have in of Slay and with Don King, you know, that automatically draws people in. And it's very interesting. But I just wanted to say, Liz and Irene, I really appreciate this conversation. You know, myself being a Muslim, I had great concern. I had really not looked at the world in probably over a year. Every now and then I'll run across a copy. The point that you made is well taken. Who does it benefit, and why would they launch this attack? Now, I know in the political arena, once you step in that arena, you have to expect that you're going to be attacked from all angles. You know, all of your flanks have to be covered.
That's right. You need to take care of all your business.
That's right. So, you know, you got to know when you go out there, if it's buried and hidden somewhere, there's somebody standing around ready to dig it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be prepared to deal with that. But what was disturbing to me is that this attack on the, our religion in such a way that it attacks a woman who grew up in this community, who has been trying to serve people to the best of her ability. She never said that I was an angel, I do everything politically correct. But she is struggling, and then to attack her, and then even to call her husband Mr. Yafet Al-Amin. And the part in the article, you didn't want to read it, but I'm going to say it, is that when he said Talib Al-Amin, that Negro's real name is, and then names his name, that's an affront to all of those brothers and sisters, not only in St. Louis, but throughout this country, who became Muslims and took on Muslim names. And you say the real name is the name that the slave masters gave us, and you don't want to recognize this Muslim name. Now, Muslims take an offense to that. And tonight, Liz, at 6:30 at the Millions More Movement office, we're going to have a public rally to discuss this and the Evening World. What I want, Mr. Sanders, Anthony Sanders, and I know the brother, you know, we've sat down, we've had dinner and talked, but he has to issue a public apology to the Muslim community.
But it's not just Mr. Sanders as well. The Roberts brothers are connected to this as well.
Are they connected to this news?
Yes, they are.
Oh, well,
yes,
that,
they are.
That's new information. You know, Mike Roberts and his brother, a longtime friend of mine, and I did call Mike because I believe in dialogue. I couldn't reach Sanders, so I called Mike. He was in the Bahamas, And I told Mike that I needed to talk to Sanders about that article in the newspaper. I left a message for him. And as soon as Mike is back in St. Louis. But regardless of the connection, this is a principal position.
Yes, it is.
And what we're demanding, and we're meeting tonight to make this demand, you know, I got problems with the world in the first place because it highlights the negative aspects of our community and the young brothers who want to be and want to see their pictures in the paper and feel that the thug life is the way to go because it's promoted in this society, then the world gives them an opportunity to see themselves across the front of every edition, whatever they got busted for, shooting somebody, selling drugs, raping a woman, breaking in the house. I mean, you don't highlight that stuff. In no civilized society do you highlight the negative. This is not, we don't need an Inquirer or a Star in our community that highlights the negative aspects that we know exist that we want to fight against. So now, being that he wants to go this way, I think that he bit into something that's going to be handled a certain way. So we're demanding from Anthony Sanders a public apology to the Muslim community of St. Louis. And if he doesn't want to issue a public policy, then we have a strategy that we will deal with the world newspaper. All of the young brothers in prison who read this paper to see if they're in this week when they got busted and all of that madness, that's sick. And we will make it known to the community, and maybe we will deal with his circulation and his advertisers. Very few advertisers in there, but we will deal with it. And that's what my position is, and I'm firm on it, Liz, because there's no reason for him to go in and talk about her dress and her hair and whether she got her head covered and call her husband this Negro. Now, if it's political, let's talk about programs and platforms. Talk about what she did vote for and didn't vote for and a position she should take on certain issues that affect the community. Let's talk about that and not go into a personal attack on her faith.
And I need one more time the time and the place of the meeting, please.
The meeting is 6:30 this evening. It's on the second floor of the Roberts Building. That's the old Sears Building for the Over the Hill Gang. On the second floor, we have a Millions More Movement office, and we're inviting the entire community out to listen to our position on this attack on the Muslim community in the evening world.
Very good. I want to thank you very much, Akbar Muhammad. And we will be talking tomorrow.
We will be talking tomorrow.
Black and brown.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Liz, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay.
We're going to take a break, folks. This is Liz Brown, Eye on the Lou. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. Stay with us.
To register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
The Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by Philip Person Roofing. Free estimates, over 16 years experience. 361-7127, 361-7127.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline New York. A new video game is coming out in the fall, which is supposed to have a Christian values slant. The game has the player in the role of a soldier in a paramilitary group that is retaking America for God. The soldier has high-tech weaponry, and the mission is to engage an infidel on the streets of a big city and either convert or kill him. The premise is to conduct spiritual and physical warfare upon those who advocate the separation of church and state. This game is called Left Behind: Eternal Forces and is based upon the series of books by well-known Christian author and pastor Rick Warren. It's also licensed by Tyndale House. That's the publishing company that put out the Left Behind series. The creators of the game are directed by the international director of Warren's purpose-driven church, Mark Carver. And the plans are to distribute the game and related products through a worldwide network of churches and pastors, many of which are mega churches. It features some serious violent acts and also gives players a chance to switch sides and fight for the ranks of the Antichrist by becoming demons who eat Christians. A spokesperson says the game will be released just in time for the Christmas shopping season. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update, brought to you this hour by Philip Person Roofing. Philip Person Roofing is a licensed and certified roofing contractor offering a 15-year warranty on a new modified rubber roof made by GAF, the largest roofing manufacturer in America. Whether commercial or residential,
residential, you can finance any new roof with your Visa or MasterCard. For a free estimate, call Philip Person Roofing at 361-7127, 361-7127. No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in AM 920 WGNU every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, then go do the right thing.
Recently declassified documents indicate Iraq was not the first time American intelligence dropped the ball. India had been working on nuclear activity since the 1950s, and the CIA had been monitoring them. But when India tested bombs in 1974 and again in 1988, the U.S. had no idea they were about to be detonated. Jeffrey Richelson, senior fellow with the National Security Archive Institute, has authored a new book based on recently declassified intelligence documents. It's called Spying on the Bomb, American Intelligence from Nazi Germany to Iran and North Korea. And he'll join us Thursday morning at 9 for a revealing insight into the intelligence community. The information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Eye on the Loo. And one more time, you have an opportunity for a fundraiser tonight. A fundraiser tonight. The details of it tonight from 5 to 8 p.m., 1717 South Broadway for Kenneth Jones. He's running for the State Senate 4th District. And for more information, call 385-6663, 385-6663. Now, Irene, we've been talking about this 4th Senatorial District and some of the concerns that we have about the only candidate in the race that doesn't have any political experience. And you were talking about how you were disturbed by Jeff Smith. I guess what I am disturbed by, what I am concerned about is what will be what he uses as a marketing tool. When approaching the community of African descent, the I've got a degree in black history piece, I play basketball piece, and I'm concerned about how much that will be pushed and that some people may accept that as, or not look beyond that as, they will look at that as evidence of something about him that may not be so.
Right, a connectedness to our community.
There you go.
And people might take that to assume that he would have a genuine concern because, mm-hmm. he has a degree in black studies, if in fact he does, and he plays basketball. He's good to, and he's going to have a basketball thing over at Fairground Park,
and
they're going to have barbecue.
Watermelon barbecue.
You don't want to say it now. The other day, maybe he's going to have some chitlins too.
Mm-hmm, and the other piece of it is that one has to wonder, what kind of a black history degree would make it make sense to you to run for office against should appear to you to be two seasoned African elected officials in a community and a town that does need additional black representation in a town that your black history degree should make it very clear for you that is polarized racially because of racist policies and because of the absence of black representation. So, and also, what part of your black history degree would get you to a place where, let us destroy the public school system and privatize it so that people outside of our community make money off of it?
Mm. And what type of black studies degree would have you to pay for a push poll that pushed further division
paid for
further division talking about Muslims.
Mm-hmm. In a climate, at this time and at this
place. Exactly.
You know, so it seems to me that as one of the younger people in this race, learn very quickly that, what's going to curry me advantage? I'm going to beat with the same stick that those outside the Democratic Party beat with.
Exactly.
You know, and that's disturbing.
And that's why for me, that's why I said he reminds me of Sam Brownback, who appears to be very congenial. Mm-hmm. You know, I love everybody. I even love Hillary Clinton.
Even.
I even love Hillary Clinton. You know, I'm approachable. I'm with you. I'm for charter schools because I want to provide a very safe environment for your children.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's dangerous.
Yeah,
it's as dangerous as the subject that you and Zenobia was talking about this morning about, you know, the right-wing conservative, ultra-conservative going after the black vote. It's dangerous.
Mm. And what time is it? What time is this?
The word on the street.
Oh, yeah.
He says, she said.
Oh, yeah.
The word on the street.
Word on the street.
Did you hear about?
No. Well, we fixed him to tell you. We fixed him to tell you. What is the word on the street this week?
Politics. I've noted that the minister said that the Mike Roberts was in the Bahamas. Well, from the Bahamas, he is trying to garner out a political.
Word on the street is, okay, let's be clear. Word on the street
is that Mike Roberts is trying to get Frank Williamson to step down from running for re-election in the 26th ward so that his son, Mike Roberts Jr., can run for the automatic seat. Spoke with Fred Williamson. He said he's campaigning. Frank said he's campaigning. He said nothing's been He says nothing has come his way that would make him stop running. He's campaigning. He's having fundraisers. In fact, he was on his way to a meeting, a community meeting, when I spoke with him last evening. But that's a very strong word on the street because they're trying to chart Mike Roberts Jr. path.
Word on the street.
Word on the street is to become mayor.
So the beat goes on, and let me just share with you all a letter from Robin Carnahan to Matt Blunt pertaining to this voter ID bill. And Carnahan is saying that I am in receipt of your letter indicating your intention to sign this bill. As you are aware that this bill mandates a number of new activities that be performed by the Secretary of State. In addition, our office must prepare, print, distribute thousands of additional provisional ballots to ensure that those without the new ID are not denied the right to vote. The estimated cost for our office to comply with these new requirements is $3.5 million. We need more money.
Where the money?
Where is the money to achieve the stated goals of your to achieve the stated goals in your letter of removing impediments to obtaining photo IDs will cost $3.5 million. I urge you to call back the General Assembly into a special session and request that they fund this measure before it goes into effect before the November 2006 election. Irene, lawsuits are going to be filed on this, aren't they?
Unfunded mandates, as well as probably other attacks. I'm hopeful that we will see a state attack and a federal attack on this legislation, and I'm hopeful that the Democrats will step to the plate.
That Robin Carnahan, that Claire McCaskill, that all of these Democrats out here, and the Democratic Party, I guess we have a Democratic Party in the state of Missouri, they need to step up to this and file the suit to keep this from happening, because how can it cost this much money and the money not be given to the Secretary of State, and we have an election that actually reflects people's intentions to vote? It's not going to happen. So, Saturday, Irene.
Saturday, 9 to 11.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. we got an institute going on.
The Saturday Morning Urban Institute.
That's right. At 1020 North Taylor.
1020 North
1020
Taylor.
1020 Liz. 1020 North Taylor
North
at the
Taylor.
Firefighters. Hall.
All right. And we're going to, it's going to be kind of like a combination of a town hall meeting, a workshop, and a political forum.
Exactly.
And we're going to talk, and that's why what we're talking about today is just so nicely segues into what we're going to be talking about this Saturday, day after tomorrow, at 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at 1020 North Taylor. That's the Firefighters Hall. We're going to be talking about what do you look for in a candidate?
What do you look for in a candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. Do we look for somebody that opposes public schools?
Probably not.
Do we look for somebody who has a push pole that tries to attack Muslims?
Probably not. Irene J. Smith, Eye on the Loo. Thank you so much, and see you Saturday.
Probably see you before then.
I know that's right. All right, y'all. Bye-bye. We'll be back, and we're gonna and on next this hour we're gonna talk about we're gonna have a minister's roundtable, pastor's roundtable. Is there wiggle room? And Thou Shalt Not Kill, Pastor James T. Morris is going to be joining us, one of the members of our roundtable. You don't want to miss this. Stay with us.
I remember saying that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below the low knee.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. American troops in Iraq need a refresher course on their P's and Q's. ABC's Steve Taylor says this order comes straight from the top.
The commander of forces in Iraq is ordering all 130,000 servicemen and women to get lectures and a slideshow on how to behave toward Iraqi civilians, on the need to follow moral, ethical, and legal standards, and to keep in mind the cultural expectations of Iraqis, even under battlefield conditions.
The Pentagon is now looking into whether some U.S. Marines were involved in the killings of unarmed Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November. This is June 1st. It's the start of the Atlantic hurricane season, and if we learned anything last year, you can't underestimate Mother Nature. New Orleans certainly learned that the hard way with Katrina. ABC's Aaron Katursky says officials are bound and determined not to repeat that nightmare.
If New Orleans needs another mass evacuation the way it did during Hurricane Katrina, the government here plans to deploy 3,000 buses to pick up evacuees. If the bus drivers bolt, National Guard troops would take the wheel of public buses. Negotiations are also underway with Amtrak to provide extra train service out of here, and officials are looking at air carriers to fly tourists home.
Forecasters say this season could be almost as destructive as last. The Department of Homeland Security is telling New York and Washington, D.C. to fight terrorism with less money from the feds. The extra money will be going to other areas. The cities were the targets in the September 11th attacks, and Virginia Congressman Jim Moran says they still may as well have a bullseye on them.
They're not going to go out to, Omaha, Nebraska, or even Sacramento, California. There's no symbolism in attacking these areas.
New York's $207 million share has been cut to $124 million, Washington's $77 million to $46 million. Secretary of State Rice is in Vienna. She's working with other diplomats to put the finishing touches on a package to get Iran to stop enriching uranium. This is ABC News.
Dad, this is my boyfriend, Scott.
So, where are you from, Scott?
Seattle.
Any brothers, sisters?
One brother.
How's your driving record?
Good.
Ever been arrested?
Huh?
Served in the military?
Sir?
Do you have any diseases?
Dad!
What if everything in life came with a 115-point inspection? Well, before we certify any Ford Lincoln Mercury pre-owned vehicle, it must first pass a rigorous point-by-point exam. Plus, all Ford Lincoln Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles come with a 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty, including 24-hour roadside assistance.
Any sports injuries?
No.
See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Welcome back to Inside D.C. I am Kim Davis, and we're talking politics with James on his car phone.
Kim, I just missed a right turn back there. Now, can I take a right at this light?
Well, I have been accused of leaning to the right.
To easily get back on track when you miss a turn, you want to ask TomTom, not Kim.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen, and a helpful voice guides you where you're going.
You have reached your destination.
TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way. Learn more at TomTom.com.
Another big case of identity theft. The Texas Guaranteed Student Loan Corporation says the personal information of over a million borrowers is missing. It was on a piece of a contractor's equipment. The nation's largest retailer is going organic.
Walmart is considering selling ethanol-based fuel at its 383 U.S. gas stations. The company brought together a group of industry, government, and academic experts on alternative fuels to discuss how Walmart could develop a network for supplying its stations with E85 fuel. E85 is a blend of 85% ethanol and 15% gasoline. Ethanol is made from corn, and corn growers say Walmart's entry into a market made up of scattered independent gas stations would be a big boost to the budding new fuel industry. Deirdre Bryant, ABC News.
3 years ago, the Dixie Chicks got the boot from country radio after lead singer Natalie Maines criticized President Bush. Now the group has a number one album. Daria Alvinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryansmeyer with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, the last suspect in a North County shooting is still at large. Police say 22-year-old Tony Henderson and 19-year-old Jamar Bufkins, both of Pagedale, allegedly shot a man in the abdomen and leg late Tuesday night at a Spanish Lake apartment complex. Henderson is in custody on charges of first-degree assault, resisting arrest, armed criminal action, and unlawful use of a weapon. Police are still looking for Bufkins. He's described as African-American, 5'11" and 140 pounds. Anyone with information is asked to call St. Louis County Police at 314-889-2341 or Crime Stoppers at 1-866-371-TIPS. The members of Bricklayers Local 1 are on strike this morning. The union's five-year contract with the Masons Contractors Association expired at midnight. A union official says the two sides couldn't come to an agreement despite long negotiations this week. No new talks are scheduled. The state of Missouri is clearing the way for the sale of caskets at retail stores. The State Board of Embalmers and Funeral Directors acknowledged last month in a consent judgment that it had no authority to regulate the sale of caskets. Valerie Bayham, a staff attorney with the Institute for Justice who represented retailer Larry Gegner, says this is a case where the state vastly exceeded its authority.
You don't need a funeral director's license to sell what amounts to no more than a wooden box.
Bayham says allowing the sale of caskets by people other than funeral directors introduces competition that will keep costs down. The Institute for Justice is a nonprofit public interest law firm specializing in cases involving government infringement of individual rights. Finally, this hour, three area lawmakers say the Missouri General Assembly could have done a better job of working for the good of the state's children. State Senators Michael Gibbons and Patrick Doherty and Representative Rachel Storch will discuss the recently concluded legislative session's impact on kids in a panel today. The panel will talk about health care cuts, education funding, and efforts to protect immunization programs. The public event begins at 4:30 at Sace and Judy's Catering at Le Chateau. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. Protect your car's engine with clean motor oil. Stop by Napa Auto Parts today and pick up Valvoline conventional motor oil for only $1.99 per quart. Napa, get the good stuff. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Bryansmeyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Morning, St. Louis, 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the MoDOT I-44 Improvement Project. Eastbound 70 from Earth City Expressway to 270, look for an accident, right lane's blocked. Eastbound 44 from Merrimack River Bridge to 270, slow traffic in the right lane. Northbound 270 at Gravoy all the way into 44, look for stop and go traffic. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason Road, look for heavy volume there. Eastbound 70 from K to CR Hughes, look for stop and go traffic. westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Of course, some congestion going on there. Eastbound 70 from 270 all the way into St. Charles Rock Road. Expect some slight delays this hour. Westbound 5570, westbound 64, and northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for heavy volume going on there, as well as westbound Kingbridge traffic, heavy from the gravel pit to Cleve's Landing, and northbound 270 from Doherty Ferry all the way to Manchester. Look for some congestion there. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the MoDOT I-44 Improvement Project. MoDOT has begun improvements that will soon make 44 smoother and safer. This will take time, so visit MoDOT.org. before you hit the road to locate I-44 work zones. MoDOT.org. Arrive alive. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Showers and thunderstorms likely today. High around 80 this evening. Mostly cloudy in the evening, becoming partly cloudy overnight. There is a chance for showers this evening with a low in the lower 60s. Friday and Saturday, partly cloudy both days. Highs in the lower 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have cloudy conditions and our skies are, and our temperature is 71. Lambert Field is also reporting 71 and clouds. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, this is Danny Glover, and you're listening to the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown on WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the low knee.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal, yet many are denied equality.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back. This is Liz Brown, and it is 8 o'clock on Thursday. That means it is Justice for Reggie Thursday, and I am here. If that is so, then I must be here with Jamala Rogers. Jamala, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, and you?
Very good, very good. This is a very special show this morning. Talk to us about what we're going to be doing today.
Well, one of the things that always occurs when there is a
issue in the community is people always go first to the clergy, because those are the institutions in our community that are that have a historical place in terms of their service to the community. And so we begin to reach out in a more, I think, a minimal way than we normally would, just because the campaign was getting a start. But, you know, once Danny Glover came, he really made an appeal to reach out to the clergy community, and also made an appeal directly to the clergy to get involved. And so we began to use that as a way to intensify our efforts to reach out. And as a result of that, we have Bishop Ward as a sponsor of the show. He's committed himself to be involved, and we need to find out the extent that involvement will take place. But we are very encouraged by the clergy response that we've gotten. Not coincidentally, we have Bishop Thomas, who is the father of Reggie Clemens, who's been out there, and he has been one of the persons who's been sort of clanging the bell for the clergy to be involved. And joining him in the campaign is Reverend Madeline Coburn, who between the two of them have been figuring out ways how to get clergy involved. And so today is a day that we felt like we really needed to tackle the question of the death penalty as it relates to clergy and people's faith. And and I think it's an important conversation, and hopefully this is not going to be the last of those conversations. And some of the churches participated in the Faith in Action last October that Amnesty International holds every year. And so we've already begun to penetrate the churches in terms of having that discussion, and there are Reggie Clemens petition boards inside some of the churches, and they've been active in that way. So we need to really intensify, because when you look at our communities, in particular the African American community, there's literally churches every four, five, six, seven blocks. And so to energize the faith-based community really does mean energizing a sizable portion of our community.
And I hear it a lot on this show, Jamala. I hear the question that people have, or even the positions that people take on the issue of the death penalty. It's almost sometimes it feels like an entitlement that people feel that they have, that, you know, if somebody does something to one, a member of my family, I should be able to eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. They quote they feel that they're quoting the Bible in their what they act like is their entitlement to be able to kill somebody if they harm someone. And it has been a perennial question, and so I'm going to just lay it out, because I'm excited for this discussion, and I love to hear what pastors and ministers have to say about it. And I want to also introduce to the audience Pastor James T. Morris of Lane Tabernacle CME Church. He is also in the studio with us to engage in this dialogue. And I'm just going to throw the question out to all of you. Can we begin with the question of, is there wiggle room in Thou Shalt Not Kill? And welcome, Reverend Coburn.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. And who wants to start the first conversation on that?
Good morning, Liz, and to all of you listening by radio this morning. My name is Bishop Reynolds Thomas, and I think if you studied scriptures correctly, and it doesn't matter what religious persuasion you are, I speak in terms of denominations for Christians, the Bible reads the same. There has to be plenty of wiggle room, or many of the stories that we read in the Bible could just not have happened. Mm-hmm. The first murder recorded in the scripture was Cain that slew his brother Abel. And the condemnation was so devastating to him, he told God that after God confronted him, that this pain is more than I can bear. Here we have in the scripture the first case of clemency. God said, I'm not going to kill you, and I'm going to put a mark on you, and I'm going to send you throughout the earth, and nobody had better lay a finger on you. So that shows that there's wiggle room. Many other prominent people in the scriptures have been given to murder. David the beloved psalmist, one of the greatest kings of Israel, was a murderer. He had Bathsheba's husband killed in battle so that he could have her. God forgave him, though he had to pay somewhat with the rest of his life, but God didn't kill him. David had redeeming qualities about his life, as do most people have redeeming qualities about their life. So in the annals of history, David goes down as one of the greatest kings that ever lived. But he had some sordid practices early on in his life that later on changed when he was confronted with them. He repented and asked God to forgive him. God did forgive him. And you know that he was the father of Solomon, and the rest of the story just goes on and on and on. Let's go to the New Testament. Let's fast forward. The great apostle Paul, writer of two-thirds of the New Testament, was a murderer. He was a religious zealot that murdered Christians for a living. He was standing in the book of Acts, I think it's chapter 7, where Stephen was stoned to death for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Paul was holding the clothes of the people that stoned him before his conversion. He had some redeeming qualities about his life. God met him on the road to Damascus, and the rest of the story most of you believers know. And Paul went on to become one of the greatest Christians that we know that ever lived.
So if he had been a part of the current justice system that we have here in the country, in the United States, he would have been executed before he went on to do what he needed to do.
He would have been executed in the press, as are most people. Mm-hmm. They're executed in the press long before they ever get to trial. And the people that go to trial from the jury pool on are already tainted before they get there.
And let me get to you, Pastor Morris. We hear the phrase, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, God says I can kill.
Well, I think as Bishop has stated in the idea that there is wiggle room in this idea about killing and murder. When we think in terms of someone saying an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, we seem to think the Bible is giving us carte blanche to always be retaliatory. God is a God of peace. We know that battles were waged in his name and always will be since the beginning of time, even until now. But the idea is not so much that we are to be so vengeful. In Romans it talks about the vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And I think we need to understand as a group of people of faith, or as people of faith, that when we are proponents of the death penalty, we're trying to, in my opinion, we're trying to take on the role of God that the state is trying to take on. And the state does not, in my opinion, have that right to take that role as meting out the final judgment upon a person's life.
And when you talk to your parishioners about this, do you get a mixed bag of it? Do you have people that we God an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? Having said all that, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth.
Yeah, certainly we get a mixed bag. It depends on who you talk to. It depends on the situation. I personally had to deal with it in my family when my nephew was killed by his wife in his driveway. And, of course, the family was devastated, and I flew to Cleveland because my sister called and said, we need you. Don't wait for the funeral. Come now, because my children are about to do something crazy. Mm. And so I jumped on the first plane, went to Cleveland to try and calm down the family and to say, look, this is not what we're going to do. We're not going to retaliate. And my niece said, but the Bible says, preacher, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And I said, yes, the Bible does. But the Bible also talks and says that all of us have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And there is the opportunity for everyone to be saved. And so let's see if that can't happen with his wife even. We went to trial. And the family wanted the death penalty. Mm. I spoke in behalf of my nephew's wife. Mm. and asked that the judge not give her the death penalty.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Colburn.
Yes, I'm here.
When you minister to your flock, when you pastor, when you preach, and you talk about this issue, what do you say? And how do you say it?
Basically, I draw from the experience of coming out of the prison as a chaplain throughout the Eastern Missouri region. And I've seen so much in the controversy of pastors, so to speak, and I don't want to come on the platform to bash pastors, me being myself, but it just frustrates me so much, Liz, that the pastors who I go up in churches and churches I speak in pulpits, and they have this facade, I would say, as if their heart is for the people and the community. And when I get them one-on-one by themselves, it's like they have their spiritual schizophrenia of people, so to speak. And it frustrates me because when I look in the Word, I look in Psalms, in the book of Psalms 100, when it tells us that we are to know that the Lord is God, and it is He that has made us and not we ourselves. I try to speak in a layman term that even a little child can understand. And if we know in respect if God made us as man in His image, it's just like if you created anything. You cannot allow someone to come in and just take over that which you've created or what you've put all your efforts into. That's the same way God looks upon man. We do not have the power nor authority to take man's life if we know in Scripture He made us. So how is it that we could take over the Creator's position as creation and destroy the creation? We can't do that. And this is something that stays in my mind and plays vividly when I talk before. And I just have to be honest. This is a platform. I spoke to two pastors that is over the clergy coalition. One, he got denounced, the other took over his place, and I'm speaking in reference of Sammy Jones as well as Parham now. I spoke to these two gentlemen. I even presented myself in their church.
Okay, Reverend, we are having you're really breaking up. I'm going to let you go, and Howard's going to get you back, and we're going to try to clean up this line, okay, because you're breaking up on us.
All right.
And let me get back to you, Pastor Morris, biblically. Where do you go to in the Bible to demonstrate God's position on the death penalty?
There are several places to go. The bishop raised two of the mm-hmm. main ones that we go to.
Mm-hmm.
I also like to add to the Cain and Abel story that when God put the protective mark on Cain's head, that he also, in sending Cain out, he kind of exile Cain from the rest of his family, and didn't kill him, but sent him away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like one who commits a crime against society, and we send them to prison,
mm-hmm.
But we don't need to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something to be said about that.
Well, let's talk about this, I appreciate the no death penalty. Biblically speaking, is there support for life without the possibility of parole? Is there biblical support for that? Is that something that God wants us to do?
Well, I think that's why I lift up that Cain story,
mm-hmm.
and for me, I think that's what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
When you are removed from your family,
mm-hmm.
and the importance of family in the whole biblical drama suggests an exile,
mm-hmm. but not a removal from human existence. I mean, he was not with his family, but he was still in the world. And free to move as he chose to move.
Well, what would we do then with Paul on the Isle of Patmos?
Mm-hmm.
John on the Isle of Patmos. He was sent out,
mm-hmm.
Exiled, imprisoned in Patmos,
mm-hmm.
So that he would not be able to affect the religious climate. And yet he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so in exile, in prison, and yet able to catch visions from God and God to talk with him, may very well suggest that if one is put away, that one still is human, one still has value to God, and if they have value to God, God certainly showed that through John.
And I guess my point is not so much the imprisonment piece, but as without the possibility of parole. And that's the part that my question is about. Does the Bible support that?
I don't think the Bible necessarily suggests that. That's a modern-day court system that does not abide around the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's endemic to America.
Mm-hmm.
God does have a lot of redeeming qualities about what he does. If you want to look it up, you can look up Numbers chapter 35. The whole premise for capital punishment hinges on a portion of scripture in Numbers chapter 35 that says one person cannot eyeball a murder and have another person commit it. There must be at least two witnesses to a murder before the eyeball-to-eyeball contact can even be established in a court of law. Another component of that is persons that have been killed accidentally. All murders are not murders. They're not with intent.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the failures, I think, of the criminal justice system. Many prosecutors fail to show intent. So rather than being able to deal with intent, they draw up scenarios and paint pictures and paint lies that would enrage the hearts of those that are going to adjudicate the matter.
Or bring up scenarios that would infer intent. And one of the most common one is the inference of race.
Absolutely.
That white victim, white female victim, black male, the inference is, oh, yeah, he would have killed her.
Absolutely. And the intent piece about that is one of the failures of the criminal justice system in America.
And we have to hold on that thought. We're going to take a break. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. We are talking about the issue of the death penalty from a scriptural position. Our conversation includes the voices of Reverend Madeline Coburn. She's joining us from St. Charles. In the studio, we have Pastor James T. Morris, Lane Tabernacle CME Church, and Bishop Reynolds Thomas, Life Victory Center. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We will be back. Travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears. Where else? Where else? Where else are you going to get a washer, a dryer, a refrigerator, a stove? How about a big screen television? How about a little screen DVD? High-end refrigerator, no problem. High-end stove. It almost shops for you and then cooks your food. You need to get on down to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge. My name is Liz Brown. When you talk to Jerome Williams, tell him I told you to.
Time again to register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now. Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Captain. Yep, indeed. Eastbound 44 at Merrimack River Bridge and 270 with slow traffic in the right lane. Northbound 55 at Imperial Main. No problems there. Northbound 270 at Granville and 44. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 from 141 Mason. Heavy volume. Eastbound 78K. Look for heavy volume there. Westbound 5570. Westbound 64 and northbound Route 3 approaches the Poplar Street Bridge are slow this hour. Westbound 270 at West Fullerton and Graham Hanley. Look for everything on the move. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Look for traffic to be returned back to normal. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Captain D's. It's summertime at Captain D's, and Captain D's catfish and fries, coleslaw, and hush puppies start at just $3.99. Wash it all down with our famous fresh brewed iced tea, of course, only at Captain D's. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Mostly are showers and thunderstorms today, high around 80 this evening, mostly cloudy throughout the evening, partly cloudy overnight. There's a chance for showers, low in the lower 60s. Friday and Saturday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the lower 80s. Currently, we have 71 degrees and cloudy skies at AM 920 WGNU. Stay tuned for more of Justice for Reggie with Liz Brown and her guests. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Holiday World at Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. Have you seen it yet? It's Holiday World's new Voyage roller coaster. I believe it's the best coaster ever built. The Voyage is one of the tallest, fastest, and longest roller coasters in the world. It has three incredible drops of over 100 feet, which create its great speed. But my favorite part is all the hills. Our hills generate more weightless airtime than any other wooden coaster. The Voyage has a world record 5 underground tunnels that will have you screaming in the dark. It also features 3 extreme 90-degree bank curves, another world record. People tell us Holiday World at Splash and Safari is a great value for families. We offer 2 parks for 1 price and free unlimited soft drinks all day long. We're located in Santa Claus, Indiana, probably much closer than you think. For smaller crowd sizes, visit us during the months of May or June. For more information, visit our website at holidayworld.com.
Holiday World and Splash and Safari, number one for family fun, now open daily.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen with Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU. Just letting you know that we are moving to a new time from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Thursday morning, dedicated to making you mad or making you think since 1999.
Next, on Mondays at 9, we take a look at the Federal Reserve System, the only institution on the planet that allows banks to create money out of nothing, then turn around and make money on that nothing money when they lend it. The Fed lets the government borrow unlimited amounts of cash with no plan or intent for repayment. It's been called the greatest ripoff since Jesse James. Financial and investment counselor Roland Manarin exposes the Federal Reserve System for what it is, but also describes how you can take this new knowledge and work it for your own financial benefit on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Justice for Reggie Thursday. I am Liz Brown. We are having a conversation this morning, and I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We're talking about the death penalty from a minister's, a pastor's, a bishop's point of view. Is there wiggle room in the death penalty? Joining us this morning, Bishop Reynolds Thomas with Life Victory Center, Pastor James T. Morris, Lane Tabernacle, CME Church, and joining us from St. Charles, Reverend Madeline Coburn. And before we get back to our guests, I do want to thank one of our sponsors, Bishop Ward, Church of God in Christ. They have so very generously supported this show, sponsored this show, and I am. And also, I've talked to Pastor Morris, and Pastor Morris has said that Lane Tabernacle CME Church will also be a sponsor of this show. It's very important, very exciting, and I want to thank you all for participating and supporting supporting this very important show that we are doing. Let's get back to Reverend Madeline Coburn in St. Charles, because we had to let her go there for a second. Reverend, welcome back.
Thank you.
And you were in the middle of talking about your frustration of getting other ministers and pastors to understand what the death penalty is, biblically speaking.
Yes, basically, as I was stating, is that I'm normally invited to a lot of the churches to be able to speak or just be in part of their congregation events or activities. And what I've come to realize is that when I present myself there, and I'm always, wherever my travels are, whether here or in Africa, I'm always speaking in terms of not just Reggie, but others that I advocate on behalf. And when they're around assemblies or congregations, I get the okay, I'm on board. And unbeknownst to them, when they don't follow up with me, because as I believe character and integrity is very important, when I get them by themselves, I get things like, well, on Reginald's behalf, well, we already understand what's going on. Matt Blunt, the governor, is not heeding to the call. Or this last one just really surprised me when I caught this particular pastor off guard, and I waited in his pastor's study before church even started. And he was, to his surprise that I was there, stated to me, he is very much for the death penalty. Now, this is not what he told me in front of his assembly. He led me to believe that he would be on board, he would call me, and he quoted to me Genesis 9:6.
What was that scripture again?
He quoted to me the Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. Now, where I really didn't want to get into debate with him, because that was the respectful thing to do, I heard him out as a pastor, and I'm speaking in regards to Pastor Parham. He's the president of the Clergy Coalition. And he led me to believe that he would call me, he would find out what it is that he could do. He didn't understand that I had previous talks with Sammy Jones prior in his private study. And he told me he called me, so I followed up with him. He didn't call within a week, so I showed back up at his church that Sunday morning before church started. And that's what he quoted me. He said that in Genesis chapter 9, verse 6, so sheddeth the man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man.
Well, let's talk about that particular passage.
Yes, please.
Bishop Thomas, can you speak to that?
And also the question that's being raised by Reverend Coburn, I'm wondering if that has anything to do with what Reverend Morris is saying, is the sort of ambiguousness of the flock.
Uh-huh.
About the death penalty, if we have mixed messages coming from the pulpit.
Well, it doesn't sound like a mixed message. It sounds like a you know, I say one thing to my church and I say something in private. But I get the mixed message piece. I mean, can we talk about that particular? Was that Genesis chapter 9, verse 6?
I think it's some of the stances are very hypocritical, because they don't take the time to study the scriptures and understand the process. Genesis chapter 9 deals with God talking to Noah and his children about repopulating the earth. Now, this inference that if man sheds blood, by man shall his blood be shed, is giving reference to what happens throughout the world since that time. Wars, rumors of wars, men fight men who shed blood, that shed blood in wars. It's a natural human happenstance as a result of sin in the earth. And it doesn't make any difference what your religious persuasion. If we study the annals of history, from Christians to Muslims to Buddhists to Taoists to whatever they are, they all fight each other because of religious beliefs. Men shed men's blood.
God.
So it has absolutely nothing to do with the death penalty that he was talking about at all. He's an unlearned preacher in that particular area. And this is the problem with most ministers. You don't pick up this type of stuff in seminary or cemetery. They just don't focus on this. These are studies that you have to do on your own. What is God really saying? An eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth is really a sort of allegorical standard bearer. Let the crime fit the punishment.
Mm.
You know, if somebody put your eye out, don't go kill them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if your hand got smashed, don't go kill your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Because the retribution and vengeance can be very ugly, as our esteemed colleague mentioned earlier about the unfortunate situation in his death. Vengeance doesn't solve anything.
Well, also the other piece of this though is black folks. That's always been my feeling, my heart. I've always just assumed that within the black church that there would just be unanimity in the understanding that we don't support government killing. I'm listening to Reverend Coburn talk about the head of our clergy coalition supporting this. Either one of you, I mean, Bishop Thomas or Pastor Morris, is this, am I wrong in thinking that? That our black church has unanimity in this whole death penalty issue?
Well, I think it's clear from the pastor said that there is not unanimity.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of proof texting. There is a lot of taking the scriptures out of context. There's a misunderstanding about what the text is actually saying. Often we do not know how to drop the text back in its original setting,
mm-hmm.
in order to see just what the text is saying.
Context, context, context.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we fail to do that. And I hear preachers lifting up the Genesis passage. I mean, you know, from Noah until the law, the Old Testament has sanctioned death.
Mm-hmm.
But we rarely lift up such things as Exodus 21 and 15, where it says that you know, you can kill a man for hitting his parent, and there are others. You can kill for kidnapping. In Exodus 21 and 17, for cursing your father, you should be put to death. There are many, many, many instances in the scriptures that give the reasons by which it's all right to kill someone. The problem that I have with preachers who lift up these texts like this is that what we fail to get at is that state-sanctioned death penalties affect our community and affect our community disproportionately. We're on the death rolls more than anyone else. I come from the state of Kentucky, and I was embarrassed and ashamed that 100% of the persons on death row in Kentucky were African-American. 100%.
Where are we 100% of anywhere?
That's right.
We're going to take a break, folks. We're talking about the issue of the death penalty. And when we come back, I really want to get to some of our callers, but I also want to get to this point of thou shalt not kill and the controversy around that from some people. We'll be back. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. I'm here with Pastor James T. Morris, Lane Tabernacle CME Church, Reverend Madeline Coburn in St. Charles, and Bishop Reynolds Thomas, Life Victory Center. I'm Liz Brown. I'm also here with Jamala Rogers. Stay with us.
To register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
Hi, everybody. This is Mike Huss. Join me Thursday nights after the 7 o'clock news right here on Radio 920 as we circle the bases. Join my roundtable guests and myself as we talk about what's happening in the world of sports, baseball, football, basketball, hockey. Yeah, we'll even talk a little NASCAR, and yeah, we'll even talk a little poker. We'll circle the bases. That's what the show's all about. 7:05 Thursday night right here on Radio 920.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in after the 5 o'clock news every Friday for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to, and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage on your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons after the 5 o'clock news on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you. This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline, Washington.
Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions said last week on the Senate floor that the new immigration bill has some horrible proposals buried deep inside its language. Sessions says that employers who hire illegals will be given amnesty for lying on their tax returns, and that the government will have to take the word of an illegal alien that he or she has been in this country long enough to be eligible for the amnesty program. Sessions also said that there will be an additional cost of $500 billion in welfare payments that will have to be expanded over the next decade and a half because those in the amnesty program will be entitled to receive them. And Dateline Montpelier. The governor of Vermont has signed a bill that will make that state the second in the country to have near-universal health care coverage for all residents. James Douglas says 95% of Vermonters without coverage will have access to health care within 3 years. The plan is called Catamount Health and will be offered by insurance companies and paid for through higher taxes on cigarettes, plus a fee to be charged to businesses that do not offer health insurance to workers. The new plan will be offered next July, but some of the benefits are expected to be phased in later this year. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update.
Maple Temple Church of God in Christ presents its regular multimedia Sunday night radio broadcast at 8 o'clock every week here on WGNU. District Superintendent John Watson invites you to lift your spirit with prayer, preaching, teaching, and singing live from the sanctuary of Maple Temple, 5159 Maple Avenue. Catch the Maple Temple radio broadcast Sunday nights at 8 o'clock here on your weekend gospel voice of choice, AM 920 WGNU.
Recently declassified documents indicate Iraq was not the first time American intelligence dropped the ball. India had been working on nuclear activity since the 1950s, and the CIA had been monitoring them. But when India tested bombs in 1974 and again in 1988, the U.S. had no idea they were about to be detonated. Jeffrey Richelson, senior fellow with the National Security Archive Institute, has authored a new book based on recently declassified intelligence documents. It's called Spying on the Bomb, American Intelligence from Nazi Germany to Iran and North Korea. And he'll join us Thursday morning at 9 for a revealing insight into the intelligence community.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Justice for Reggie. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We're talking, we're having a pastoral roundtable. We're talking about the issue of the death penalty. Is there wiggle room in Thou Shalt Not Kill? Our guest this morning, Reverend Madeline Coburn, joining us from St. Charles, Pastor James C. Morris, Lane Tabernacle CME Church, Bishop Reynolds Thomas, Life Victory Center, and I am Liz Brown. And I want to get to this because I hear this all the time on the air when people ask about the death penalty. Thou shalt not kill. Well, it doesn't say thou shalt not murder. There's a difference. Help me with that.
Help me with that. Thou shalt not kill. Proponents of the death penalty suggest that the original text says that thou shalt not murder. Mm-hmm. And if one commits premeditated murder, then the state has the right to kill.
Okay, because that's not murder.
Because that's not murder.
Mm. And how do you square that?
I can't square that. Mm. I don't square that. Mm-hmm. Because what the state sanctions is premeditated murder. When the death sentence is given, a date of execution is given. We make ready. We inform the family members. We get witnesses. We give them a date to be at the penitentiary to witness this murder. And that's premeditated.
It's another type of murder.
Another type, a civilized,
they would argue it's civilized. I don't know of anything more uncivilized than having witnesses to a murder and calling them up and making sure you're going
to
be there.
That's what they used to do to black folks in the South. Mm-hmm. They called it lynching.
I was going to
Bishop Thomas.
Just visit that component of it. It's the same scenario that you created about state-sanctioned killing. It was created in lynching. It's a horrible thing to think that there's a book written in these United States about the last 5,000 lynchings in America.
Without sanctuary.
And these people were black people, black men and women, pulled out in the middle of the night, in the middle of the day, whenever, however. And they became strange fruit hanging from the trees throughout America. It's an indictment against the racism that permeates this society, and we see it on every level. Now there's legalized lynching, legalized slavery in the prison industrial complex, where one in four black men in America are either incarcerated on papers, have been convicted felons and can no longer vote, and they're tied into the system, and we have been systematically eliminated from participating in this great society with which we live. From 1982 to the year 2000, the rate of incarceration for blacks increased fourfold.
Let me get to a caller or two, please. Gary, you have a question for one of our guests.
Yes, I was listening to one of the guests a while ago talking about the ninth chapter of Genesis, and I really think he failed to look at the fifth verse where God was talking there, and he says, your lives will I require at the hand of, and he goes on and on. And I think he was saying that he was taking it in context, but I believe that he was not.
And you believe now, that because of what you just read?
Correct.
Okay, let me let one of the pastors, a reverend or a bishop, respond to that. And I believe what the caller was referring to was chapter 9, Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. And the statement was is that it was being taken out of context because the verse 5 was not read. And Reverend Coburn, you can jump in here as well if you would like to. And, of course, Pastor Morris, you can jump in as well.
Well, if I may add to that, that's where exactly I was going, but he never gave me the opportunity to speak to that because he was trying to walk me out of his church as he was speaking it. And that's when I kind of pulled back, and I basically asked him, I said, Reverend Parham, if I may, with all due respect, sir, this has nothing to do with the Clergy Coalition nor with your church here. I would like to know what you personally feel. What is your personal belief? And I actually got outside of the realm of Reginald and even asked him, what if this was your own child, sir, and you know all evidence points to reasonable doubt? Would you then look upon that same scripture? And then that's when he went on to tell me, well, I do believe that the death penalty is permissible for some cases, and it has been taken out of context, but that is just my personal belief. And then that's when he walked me out of his church. And I knew from him making that statement, he did not have profound backing of that, and it was taken out of context.
Well, folks,
and
please, we only have a few minutes here. Can you speak to the what would make that in context? Chapter 9, verse 6, and verse 5. How do we put that in context? Reverend Coburn?
Well, basically, with looking at it, and even as I'm looking at it, the Lord said, and surely your blood of your lives will I require. And then it goes on to talk about every beast, how he required it. But when he goes down to chapter 6, when he said, whoso shedded man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. That is the key identifier. God made man in his image. We are his creation. Therefore, we do not have the authority, nor do we have the right to be able to take man's life, whether intentional or unintentional, because if he is the creator and the creator of all things, as Psalms 24:1 says, all therein dwells. He is the Lord thy God. We have no right. And this is something I try to impose upon those whom I speak with. What give you the mindset
And what it goes back to is the basics. We are not in the Word as instructed. We are not following the Word as instructed. We're taking it out of context, using it for our own vainglory.
Okay, and Pastor Morris.
I would agree with my sister that it says, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made man. Since we are made in God's image, and it is God who made us, we do not have the right to take another man's life, and neither does the state.
4540400 is my phone number. One more quick question or point. Andre.
Good morning.
Yes, quickly, please.
I'm sorry I didn't hear the conversation from the beginning because it's so interesting, but one thing that I appreciate one of the ministers saying is about stressing context. And the thing that has always really irked me about these discussions is, and especially with the black church, is that so many of us pastors on down just seem to leave our minds at the front door. How is there ever a time, I would like to ask any of the clergy there, is there ever a time when you all come to a place where you just need to decide to think for yourself regardless of what the Word says? I don't even care about what
okay,
the Word
I'm gonna
says.
Okay, I'm going to let that be the question. Did you get the question? Do you think outside of the Bible? Is it the Bible? I think that's what the question is.
I got the question, and I would first advocate that the Bible is a roadmap by which we are to conduct and live our lives. I think that there are truths of the Bible. And I think that there are also some things in the Holy Word that we need to understand are there as a guide and to help us to think about what we should and we should not be doing. Paul said, women, be quiet in the church. And if you want to know anything when you get home, ask your husbands. Well, where would we be without women in the church?
And final thoughts, where would you send people to in the Bible to give them clarity on what God's position is on the death penalty?
I think Numbers 35 is a good one that all ministers should peruse in light of thinking about David and Cain and the Apostle Paul and others who have committed these atrocities and how God dealt with them. It requires a lot of study. You just cannot go over the surface and say an eye for an eye, a tooth for tooth, without understanding the parameters that God has set. I had a meeting with some rabbis at the Ethical Society about 5 or 6 years ago. They themselves said throughout Jewish antiquity, this system was rarely, if ever, applied because it was a basic guide to keep the society clean.
And that has to be the last word. I want to thank you all, Reverend Madeline Coburn, Pastor James T. Morris, Bishop Reynolds Thomas, and of course, Jamala Rogers. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for invigorating conversation.
Absolutely.
You,
and I will be back in the next hour. Y'all stay with me.
Issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. Do it with less money. That's what the Department of Homeland Security is telling New York and Washington, D.C. It's cutting funding for anti-terrorism efforts to both cities, increasing the money for others. That has a lot of people who lived through the 9/11 attacks angry. ABC's Stephen Portnoy has details from Washington.
The House Homeland Security Chairman, a New York Republican, says the department's decision is a declaration of war. Washington area Congressman Jim Moran says it's more about protecting a Republican majority.
They're going to send Homeland Security money out in order to help them politically in the November 2006 election.
The department says the funding decisions were based on scoring and peer review by experts. The biggest cities will still receive the most money. New York and Washington had hoped they'd receive more. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Washington.
Secretary of State Rice is in Vienna. She's working with diplomats from America's European allies, China and Russia. They're putting the finishing touches on an incentive package for Iran. It says the nations will hold strategic talks if Tehran stops enriching uranium. Non-proliferation expert Mark Fitzpatrick says this is a no-brainer.
Iran has a chance right now to avoid all that by finding a way to say yes, and I think there is a way.
Iran's foreign minister, however, says that no nation has the right to dictate Iran's nuclear policy. The Atlantic hurricane season began today. Forecasters say it could be almost as bad as last year, from which Florida is still trying to recover.
A new hurricane season and many tarps are still covering roofs across Florida. Roofing companies are booked solid and materials are hard to come by quickly enough. This roofer says workers are doing their best.
We've been busy ever since Katrina, the hurricanes that hit. We've been like super busy ever since, working like 6 days.
Glass companies are also booked. One reason you still see plywood on many windows. Donna Rapato, ABC News, Miami.
U.S. soldiers in Iraq are going back to school. Their commander says they need a crash course in core values and the Iraqi culture. ABC News Money Scope, Dow up 18 points, NASDAQ ahead 8. This is ABC News.
Dad, this is my boyfriend, Scott.
So, where are you from, Scott?
Seattle.
Any brothers, sisters?
One brother.
How's your driving record?
Good.
Ever been arrested?
Huh?
Serve in the military?
Sir?
Do you have any diseases?
Dad!
What if everything in life came with a 115-point inspection? Well, before we certify any Ford Lincoln Mercury pre-owned vehicle, it must first pass a rigorous point-by-point exam. Plus, all Ford Lincoln Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles come with a 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty, including 24-hour roadside assistance.
Any sports injuries?
No.
See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Welcome back to Inside D.C. I am Kim Davis, and we're talking politics with James on his car phone.
Kim, I just missed a right turn back there. Now, can I take a right at this light?
Well, I have been accused of leaning to the right.
To easily get back on track when you miss a turn, you want to ask TomTom, not Kim.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen, and a helpful voice guides you where you're going.
You have reached your destination.
TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way. Learn more at TomTom.com.
How could he make the mistake?
I feel like we're all starting right where we were again and just starting the grieving all over again.
That's a friend of Laura Van Ryn and Whitney Surak. The families of the two college students are also wondering the same thing. After a coroner in Indiana confused a young woman killed in the crash with her friend who survived. The mistake was finally realized after the Surak's family buried her, or at least they thought they did. Turned out she'd survived. Her friend Van Ryn, whom the coroner initially said survived, did not. Yahoo is taking direct aim at YouTube.com, an internet site that's amassed a huge audience, by encouraging people to post and send homemade clips. Yahoo will also now store homemade videos and encourage people to browse and judge them. Batwoman is coming out of the cave, and she is coming out of the closet. DC Comics is giving the Gotham crime fighter a new look and a new point of view. She's going to be a lesbian. I'm Daria Alvinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a St. Louis man is dead after apparently falling overboard while fishing on Truman Lake. The Missouri Water Patrol says 71-year-old Wilborn Wright of St. Louis and his brother were fishing together in separate boats yesterday. Wright's brother went for help when he saw his boat empty with the motor running. The Water Patrol recovered Wright's body about 20 feet from the shore in 5 feet of water. A proposed new bridge over the Mississippi River may not be built. Illinois State Representative Jay Hoffman and Congressman Jerry Costello unveiled an alternative to the proposed new bridge today. The so-called Martin Luther King coupler calls for a new four-lane span just north of the Martin Luther King Bridge. Costello and Hoffman say they're offering the alternative because they're opposed to the Missouri Department of Transportation's proposal to toll the new bridge. A local advocacy group will hold a town hall meeting today to discuss Medicare Part D. Missouri ProVote has invited Senators Jim Talent and Kit Bond and Congressmen Russ Carnahan, William Lacey Clay, and Todd Akin to this morning's meeting. Seniors, disabled residents, and others will testify on problems with the Medicare prescription plan. The meeting begins at 11 o'clock this morning at the Ferguson Municipal Public Library. Finally this hour, two St. Louis area organizations will get grants to provide dental sealants for children. James Kimmy, the president and CEO of the Missouri Foundation for Health, says tooth decay in elementary school children is a problem in Missouri.
One proven method of preventing that decay is to do dental sealants at about the third grade level. And we borrowed from the federal government's Preventive Services Task Force a program for school-based or school-related dental sealant programs.
Family Health Care Centers and the Institute for Research and Education in Family Medicine will receive some of the $1.8 million in grant money. Grants are also going to organizations in New Madrid, Potosi, Ellington, and Cheriton County. Kimmy says more than 10,000 children statewide can receive dental sealants through the grants. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. Napa Auto has great gifts for Father's Day. The Vice Grip 3-piece groove lock tool set with adjusting handles and a multi-groove ratcheting system, only $59.99. Napa, get the good stuff. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Sears. Westbound 270-44, look for slight delays. Westbound 40 at Route End, look for construction there. The I-70 reversible lanes are closed for maintenance. Eastbound 40 at N is also construction. Left lanes closed. There, in fact, there are a number of construction sites going on at this area around St. Louis and the St. Louis County surrounding areas. So just use caution as you roll through those construction zones. All your approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge as well as the King Bridge have broken up and looking good this hour. Northbound 270 and 44 is on the move. Westbound 270 from the Illinois side on in looks pretty good as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Sears. The weekly ad from Sears is now available online. Just go to Sears.com and click on their weekly ad for hundreds of great offers. The weekly ad is Sears.com. It's too many to fit in print. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Showers and thunderstorms likely, high around 80. This evening mostly cloudy. In the evening becoming partly cloudy overnight. A chance for showers, low in the lower 60s. Friday partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. And Saturday pretty much the same, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. Currently we have clouds and 72 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 71 and clouds as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
At 9, we take a look at the Federal Reserve System, the only institution on the planet that allows banks to create money out of nothing, then turn around and make money on that nothing money when they lend it. The Fed lets the government borrow unlimited amounts of cash with no plan or intent for repayment. It's been called the greatest ripoff since Jesse James. Financial and investment counselor Roland Manarin exposes the Federal Reserve System for what it is, but also describes how you can take this new knowledge and work it for your own financial benefit on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you say?
Was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you pick a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equality.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number is 1-877-920-WGNU. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want to email me, you can do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. That's revolution@lizbrown.com. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways you need to get up. You need to get to me. This morning we are going to be talking with Jeffrey Richelson. He's a senior fellow at the National Security Archive Institute, and he is joining us from L.A. Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Very good. Tell us about your the Institute.
Well, the National Security Archive is an organization, private organization located in Washington, D.C., that primary purpose is to obtain declassified documents about a variety of subjects relating to U.S. foreign and national security policy and publish them, and it does that through its electronic briefing books, which you can go through simply by going to their website, or as well as these very large document sets consisting of 15,000 or more declassified pages, which are available in a number of research libraries across the country. So in the course of a year, the archive will publish these briefing books on subjects ranging from intelligence to nuclear history to Latin America to Vietnam, the latest posting concerns Henry Kissinger's conversations while he was Secretary of State and National Security Advisor.
And this morning you are here to share with us which part of that declassification?
Well, I gather I'm here to talk about spying on the bomb.
Exactly. Exactly. So how long did it take you to put together that book?
Well, it took, I'd say, about 17 months to actually write it.
Mm-hmm.
It took a couple of years of pretty much full-time research before that to get to the point of writing it. But I had been collecting this type of material for many years previously. So there wasn't a point in which I started from zero and did nothing but it's at least 3 or 4 years of very intense work.
What was your motivation behind it? What was that thing that made you say, you know what, I need to write a book about this?
Well, I've for many years been interested in the uses of technology to collect intelligence, and that's certainly a major part of the book. I was also interested in doing a book on the application, so it wasn't just about the systems used to collect intelligence, but against a particular type of target. And I had been interested in a book like this for a long time, but only a few years ago did I conclude that there was really enough material out there to make it a worthwhile project. And that's, I think, that's the thing that sort of triggered my desire to actually go ahead and write this book.
Were you concerned at all with your ability to be able to get the information? Because, I mean, you're writing about something that is all the way through classified.
A lot of it is. I mean, I was able to get a lot of declassified documents. There's also much more that remains classified. But I reached the point before I submitted the proposal where I concluded that it was possible that between what already appeared in the open literature, whether it be in books or newspapers, what I already had from the National Archives and what I could probably obtain from the Freedom of Information Act, I concluded that it wouldn't be a problem in getting more than enough to do a good book. Certainly not everything that I would like, certainly not everything that's relevant, but certainly enough to do a pretty decent book on the subject.
When we talk about the technology to collect intelligence, there has been quite an evolution of that. Can you take us through some of the evolution of the technology?
Sure. It occurs. I guess I'd break it down into two basic areas in which, the way it's evolved. One is the ability to collect data from space. If you go back to the end of World War II, the beginning of the Cold War, if the United States wanted to find out what was happening within a particular country at some installation in a remote location, whether it was in the Soviet Union, China, or elsewhere, it had to overfly that that installation with an aircraft, which was very dangerous, could be shot down, and also was limited in that you could only do a certain number of flights in a period of time. Once you got into space with photo reconnaissance satellites, signals intelligence satellites, other type of satellites, there was an ability to overfly any part of a given country and to do it repeatedly. So the first mission of the Corona satellite, the first U.S. photo reconnaissance satellite, covered more territory in one day than the previous 24 missions of the U-2, which started flying in 1956. Now we've moved to a point where we have 5-6 satellites up there all year round, and so they're able to send back hundreds of thousands of images. So that's one way in which the technology has evolved, this ability to cover any part of the world virtually any day and do it repeatedly. Second way is in terms of the type of signatures or signals that can be detected. Again, if you go back to the end of World War II, if you talked about taking a photograph, you were talking about a conventional photograph as we sort of all understand it, the photograph you would take from a regular camera. Over time, we've learned there have been new ways, to get an image, for example, through radar, through infrared, but also in terms of detecting signals related to nuclear activities. We have had satellites up for over 4 decades now that can detect things like the light signature from a nuclear explosion, the X-rays, the gamma rays, all sorts of signatures. So we've evolved, the country's ability has evolved both in the frequency with which it can cover targets and the ability to cover targets in throughout countries, as well as the different types of signals that can be detected in order to produce intelligence.
And that's the second way.
Yes.
Okay. And we need to take a break here. My name is Liz Brown. I am talking to Jeffrey Richelson. He's a senior fellow at the National Security Archive and Institute, and he's joining us from L.A. We'll be right back.
Time has come today. Young hearts can go their way. Can't put it off another day. I don't care what others say. They think we don't listen anyway. Time has come today.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in after the 5 o'clock news every Friday for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage on your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons after the 5 o'clock news on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
again to register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Hi, everybody. This is Mike Huz. Join me Thursday nights after the 7 o'clock news right here on Radio 920 as we circle the bases. Join my roundtable guests and myself as we talk about what's happening in the world of sports, baseball, football, basketball, hockey. Yeah, we'll even talk a little NASCAR, and yeah, we'll even talk a little poker. We'll circle the bases. That's what the show's all about. 7:05 Thursday night right here on Radio 920.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, big-screen television, little-screen television, DVD players, everything that you need at a Sears in your own neighborhood. You know what? You need to get on over to Sears to get your shop on. My name is Liz Brown. When you go to Sears, tell them I told you to.
Next, on Mondays at 9, we take a look at the Federal Reserve System, the only institution on the planet that allows banks to create money out of nothing, then turn around and make money on that nothing money when they lend it. The Fed lets the government borrow unlimited amounts of cash with no plan or intent for repayment. It's been called the greatest ripoff since Jesse James. Financial and investment counselor Roland Manarin exposes the Federal Reserve System for what it is, but also describes how you can take this new knowledge and work it for your own financial benefit on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays at 12 noon for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. I learned at an early age that animals matter to me. Every week, we'll share your stories. We'll discuss issues that matter most to you and your companion animals, from breed-specific laws to puppy mills, and answer your questions about pet care as well. You'll also enjoy our special guests as they share their tales. It's an hour of fur, friends, and fun every week. Join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales every Friday at 12 noon on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
Professor Stephen Yates of the University of South Carolina is our guest Tuesday morning at 7. He recently wrote a disturbing dissertation on a plan the Bush administration is pushing to merge Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. into a single regional government, or a Western version of the European Union. It would create a huge free trade zone that would allow goods and people to move freely across borders, effectively doing away with domestic citizenship. How would such different political systems work as one entity? Some points to ponder Tuesday morning at 7 with Professor Stephen Yates, right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Around the world, behind the story, it's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Liz Brown.
What you don't understand, my words might never explain. So I am hoping that time will. Things may not go as you plan. Dark clouds might bring you pain, but I will be in your heart still, telling you to. Down. Don't feast your eyes on things that are on the ground. And if it gets hard to focus when you're traveling almost at the speed of sound, feeling nowhere bound, remember what I told you and don't you dare.
Well, Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and this morning we are talking with author Jeffrey Richelson. He is a senior fellow at the National Security Archive Institute, and he's joining us from L.A. He has written the book Spying on the Bomb. And Jeffrey, welcome back. Jeffrey? Welcome back.
Thank you.
You were telling us about the kind of the evolution of this of the technology of collecting intelligence.
Yes.
And I want to get to some components of your book, because what you discovered in it is that despite the technology that we did have at the time, our country didn't warn of nuclear tests?
Well, there were, throughout the 40-plus years that I, 50 years I cover, in the book, there were a number of instances where the U.S. was not able, the U.S. intelligence community was not able to provide the president and others with certain knowledge that the test was about to occur. I mean, that occurred first off in 1949, when the Soviet Union tested its first nuclear device in August of 1949, and previous to that, the reports from the CIA and others predicted that they wouldn't have a nuclear device until no earlier than 1950, and in some cases not until 1953. So they were certainly off in that case. In the case of China, they were wrong about how the Chinese were proceeding to build a bomb, in that the Chinese were using uranium rather than plutonium. And for a long period of time, they expected the test to be a little bit later than it actually occurred, but it turned out to be not that much later. But if you scroll ahead a few years, the 1974 test from India was a surprise, as well as the 1998 tests, which nobody in the intelligence community believed the Indians were going to do. They believed that the rhetoric of the party that had just assumed control of the Indian government was just rhetoric, and that when they said that they were going to incorporate nuclear weapons into Indian defense strategy, they didn't really mean it.
Is there a pattern for these mistakes, for this non-predictability? Are we seeing the same types of mistakes being made by the CIA and our intelligence community? Or is it a different case, different mistake?
If you look at some of the postmortems that they do afterwards to try to figure out what went wrong, usually they will say things like there was not enough attention devoted to the problem. That was not true in the Soviet case, but in the Indian case, or that there was insufficient human intelligence, spies on the ground. But some of those things are true by definition. In hindsight, it's always possible to say they should have devoted more attention to it, and that we lack spies, because obviously if we had them, we would have known about it. I think there's.
Is that true? I mean, it's easy to say, but is that true?
Is it true that
if we had more spies, we would have been able to do it? I mean,
it depends on where the spies are. I mean, one point that's important to keep in mind with regard to at least some of these nuclear tests is that the governments involved, when they're developing weapons covertly, devote a great deal of attention and resources to keeping their activities secret. So in the case of, say, the Indian government in 1974, there were three people outside of the scientists who knew what was going on. So the defense minister, the foreign affairs minister, weren't told.
Is within India?
Okay,
India. All right.
So you only had a small coterie of scientists plus the prime minister and two of her closest officials who knew what was going on. So it was very difficult to have a spy who would be able to provide information about a test, because there were a restricted number of people who knew about it. In 1998, the problem was there that we didn't devote enough resources to monitoring the Indian program. There was a satellite photograph that was sitting on somebody's desk the morning of the test, but that had not been analyzed during the period right before the test. So the reasons are often different. It's certainly true by definition that you didn't have a spy in the right place, but whether you could have gotten one there is not always clear because of the extraordinary measures some of these countries take to protect information about what they're planning to do.
Well, isn't that always then the nature of the challenge of assessing the effectiveness of your intelligence community? Is that, you know, what they're trying to find out is secret. And some people are going to keep secrets better than other people keep secrets. So I guess, how do you prepare and how do you analyze if it's working?
Well, I think what you have to do is ask what reasonably could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to say, well, they didn't want to test, so therefore it was a intelligence failure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by definition, of course, they failed to provide the information, but whether they could have done much better is something one has to actually look at the facts and look at the precautions or the measures that the other government took to protect the information, whether this particular country's activities should have been given higher priority or given that there are a lot of other things happening in the world, the right amount of attention had been devoted to it, whether people should have drawn other conclusions. Sometimes it's the case that people get stuck in a rut or get very stubborn, and that was the case with regard to China in 1964. There was a mindset that the Chinese will develop a nuclear weapon using plutonium because that's the easiest path to the bomb. And everything that the CIA collected and analyzed was filtered through that sort of assumption. And there were people on the outside who said that they're really not doing a good job and complained about it. And so they were, during that period of time, there was a reason to look at what the agency was doing and say that it could do better, that it's not considering valid, it's not really considering all the possibilities. So you really have to go through what collection systems you had, what data was actually obtainable either through what you have or what you could have done differently that was reasonable, and then try to assess whether there was a real failure there or whether it was simply the fact that the other country had protected its data real well, very well.
Are there, before we go to any kind of applications of what your book reveals, Spying on the Bomb, any applications of what you have found to what's going on in Iran right now or what's going on in North Korea right now, I'd like to talk some more about what happened in India in 1974. Are there ramifications today of that resulted from that failure to discover that? And what's the lesson there?
Excuse me. I guess there were, ramifications, at least in the short term, in that there were recommendations to devote more attention to what was at the time called the Nth Country Problem. In other words, development of nuclear weapons by countries outside the five established countries at the time who had acknowledged that they had developed nuclear weapons. Exactly how much more attention was devoted to that, it's hard to say. The records aren't available on that. But it certainly heightened the understanding that there needed to be more attention to this problem and proliferation as opposed to just the nuclear developments in a select set of countries became a even greater concern as a result of the test.
Well, then, if there aren't any clear long-term ramifications of it, do we need to look at India differently? Because as you know, well know, that the Bush administration is proposing legislation that would basically change our U.S. non-proliferation and export control laws and policies that would allow full nuclear cooperation with India. Did they behave in a way that we should take lessons from that and reconsider this type of a move? Should we take that from what happened in 1974?
I don't know that there's a link between what happened in 1974 and judgments as to the Bush policy today concerning India. I think there's an argument to be made that India should be treated differently than other countries because it is a democratic society, and if it decides through its democratic process that it needs to have nuclear weapons, that's quite different from a country like Iran or North Korea pursuing nuclear weapons.
Well, let's go to Iran and North Korea. Are there, in the research that you have done and the studies that you have engaged in, are there actions that we should be engaging in, or are there considerations that we should be taking as we attempt to engage in a dialogue on nuclear proliferation with either one of these countries? Let's start with Iran.
Well, I think the best thing, the first step in dealing with the Iranian problem is simply trying to get as much solid information as possible. And certainly we have a better understanding, I think, of the Iranian program than we did of the Iraqi program in 2003, because we know that there are major facilities involved in producing various elements of a nuclear working on various elements of a nuclear weapons program, a heavy water facility, uranium enrichment facilities. We don't certainly know.
And that's a result of the technology evolution that you're talking about.
That's partially a result of the technology evolution, the fact that we can photograph these facilities from space repeatedly, that we can have experts who understand what those photographs mean, provides us with a lot of information on those programs. In terms of engaging with Iran or what we should, how that should affect our policy, I guess from my viewpoint, it's clear that they are pursuing a nuclear weapons program. There doesn't seem to be any doubt based on the data that we and other countries have gathered, as well as Iranian behavior. So then it moves on to the question of how do you think one should deal with that? And some people think that negotiations and talking to the Iranians will have some real chance of solving the problem. I personally don't, and think that short of...
Why don't you think that diplomacy would be a worthwhile exercise with Iran?
Well, I think, one, the nature of the government, partially, but I think also a lesson I got or learned from doing the book is that countries that are really committed to developing nuclear weapons, and it seems to me that Iran is, given all the resources it's poured into it, when confronted with or challenged about what they're really up to, simply lie about it and lie about it and lie about it until the point they have the weapon. And that this, what the Iranians are doing seems to be just a typical stalling tactic used by Iraq and North Korea in similar instances, where they are, on the one hand, defiant, then they say they want to talk, but then they reject the offers and offers that are made or arrangements, agreements that are come to are then backed out of, as the North Koreans have done. So I think the only way to use diplomacy to solve the Iranian problem is if there's a unified front that makes it very clear that there will be very severe consequences if they do not stop the nuclear weapons program. And unfortunately, I don't think the U.S. can get other countries on board to that, because they don't, particularly China and Russia, because it's not, they don't view it in their interests, I think, to help the U.S. in this area.
Is it problematic that, or is it your assessment that Iran is in violation of the Non-Proliferation Act?
Well, it seems to be, in that it has conducted nuclear activities that were covered by the act, that it was obligated to report, and then it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
For a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's not my biggest concern, that they're violating the treaty. My
mm-hmm.
biggest concern is the nature of the government,
mm-hmm.
what they're likely to do with nuclear weapons if they had them.
Mm-hmm. And I guess how do we, because one of the things that the government of Iran has stated repeatedly is their concern about other countries having nuclear weapons, and why shouldn't they be able to have access to the same technology that other countries do, and Israel being one of them. How do we factor that in our assessment of saying or having concerns about the Iranian move towards nuclear weapons?
Well, I think it's important, certainly, to try to understand their thinking
mm-hmm.
and what motivates them, because
mm-hmm.
That's one potential way of dealing with the problem. But I would question whether, if Israel had nuclear weapons or not, that would make any difference to Iran, truly. Again, given the statements that the president of Iran has made about Israel and about the West, as well as, I think, the desire of many of these countries to develop the most impressive weapons and most powerful weapons possible, that I think that they're simply committed to that type of development, and whether other countries in the Middle East, such as whether Israel has weapons or not, is not really the determining factor, or even necessarily a major factor.
Okay, but even if you thought that if Israel was going to use the bombs on you?
Well, Israel has never even acknowledged that it has an arsenal, although everybody knows that it does.
Right.
And they've never used it. And again, it's possible that they have all sorts of, sort of paranoid fantasies about Israel dropping nuclear weapons on them, but I don't know that that's really the case, and that would make a difference one way or the other in terms of their actual pursuit of nuclear weapons. So I guess what I'm saying is that even if Israel got rid of its nuclear weapons tomorrow, I'm not sure, I doubt that would change the Iranian policy. And
wouldn't it be helpful to put it on the table, though, that your neighbor won't have any and you won't have any?
Well,
either?
I don't see Israel voluntarily giving up its nuclear weapons.
That's the point.
In terms of us, the United States, trying to persuade them to, I would say the same thing I said about India. They're a democratic country, a free society. If they decide that they have nuclear weapons, they need to have nuclear weapons to protect themselves.
But they also have to follow the same rules that the rest of the world has with regard to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation
Act. Oh, no, they don't, because they didn't sign it.
Okay. Well, then,
so
I guess therein lies the problem. If one country can be criticized for not following it and be held accountable for it and be sanctioned for not, and then another country who has the same thing that is the problem doesn't even have to sign it and can have them, that just doesn't seem balanced in the way in the world, in a world view.
Well, every country has had the choice of whether to sign the treaty or not, and India didn't sign the treaty, Pakistan didn't sign the treaty, Israel didn't sign the treaty, and the thing is that Iran did, and on the basis of signing the treaty, it gets certain privileges.
Mm-hmm.
Just as when Iraq signed the treaty, it had access to nuclear technology that it would not have had it not signed the treaty. So it's their choice to make the trade-off. And the point,
mm-hmm.
One point of the treaty was to give countries that were willing to give up nuclear weapons or not pursue them a payoff in return, which was this nuclear technology. So certainly they could abrogate the treaty They could have not signed it in the first place, but they did.
And they could abrogate it.
And in any case, as I said, my concern is not so much whether North Korea or Iran signed the treaty or didn't sign the treaty. My own concern is just the nature of the government and their having access or possession of nuclear weapons.
And we're going to have to let that be the end. Jeffrey Richelson, Senior Fellow, National Security Archive Institute, joining us from L.A., author of the book Spying on the Bomb. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
You're welcome.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, The Wake Up Call. I will be back after this break. Stay with me.
Register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now. Professor Stephen Yates of the University of South Carolina is our guest Tuesday morning at 7. He recently wrote a disturbing dissertation on a plan the Bush administration is pushing to merge Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. into a single regional government, or a Western version of the European Union. It would create a huge free trade zone that would allow goods and people to move freely across borders, effectively doing away with domestic citizenship. How would such different political systems work as one entity? Some points to ponder Tuesday morning at 7 with Professor Stephen Yates, right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Want to help local charities and not-for-profit groups? Want to have a great time doing it? Then head down to Patty Long's 9th Street Abbey in Soulard this Friday from 5 to 9 p.m. for a party on the patio. Every week, a different organization receives a portion of the proceeds and all the tips that their volunteer service can bring in. There's a featured drink each week, free hors d'oeuvres, and live music. Summer fun and helping others has never been so easy. Party on the patio with Patty Long's 9th Street Abbey all summer long. This week's party benefits the Women's Safe House.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you. Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in health care providers. And we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, defending truth, fighting bad guys, and sometimes wearing a mask. A little history, a little entertainment, current events, a lot of good fun, and healthy debate. Call me, argue. If you're wrong, I will disarm you. But have no fear. The Sloan Ranger never shoots to kill. That's weekdays 5 to 6 on WGNU.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline London. The United States is being accused of trying to lessen the impact of an international declaration under consideration this week concerning the global AIDS effort. The United Nations General Assembly is debating the issue this week, and AIDS advocates say America wants to delete treatment targets and any references to prevention measures that religious groups may not agree with. The most debatable passages water down the use of condoms and reproductive health work in order to show the priorities of the Bush administration's position on AIDS. Few representatives from leading donor nations are taking part in the UN discussion. First Lady Laura Bush is to speak for the United States, even though she has no decision-making power. Several non-governmental organizations say they were unable to get American visas to send representatives to the conference, and they were prevented from being a part of the negotiations on the declaration that took place before the assembly started working on that statement. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update.
The St. Louis Rams will host the 10th annual Bowl-a-Rama to benefit the Epilepsy Foundation of the St. Louis region on Monday, June 5th at Tropicana Lanes. Rams players will bowl with the participants from 7 to 8 p.m., with the Rams offense taking on the Rams defense at 8:30. Tickets are $100 to bowl with the Rams or $75 to observe. For more info, call 314-645-6969. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in after the 5 o'clock news every Friday for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage on your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons after the 5 o'clock news on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA and let's take on the day and learn how to do the right thing.
Circle the bases with Mike Huss and his panel online at WGNU.net.
Next, on Mondays at 9, we take a look at the Federal Reserve System, the only institution on the planet that allows banks to create money out of nothing, then turn around and make money on that nothing money when they lend it. The Fed lets the government borrow unlimited amounts of cash with no plan or intent for repayment. It's been called the greatest ripoff since Jesse James. Financial and investment counselor Roland Manarin exposes the Federal Reserve System for what it is, but also describes how you can take this new knowledge and work it for your own financial benefit on the next edition of Mondays at 9. Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up, get up, get to me. We have much to talk about. Please don't forget Saturday. Irene J. Smith and myself, the Saturday morning Urban Institute at 1020 North Taylor. That's the Fire Building from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Oh, it's on. It's a combination of a town hall meeting. It's a combination of an urban think tank. It's a combination of workshop. All of that. How do you pick a candidate? How do you decide who should run for office? We need to have this conversation. I encourage everyone to come on out and make it part of your Saturday morning routine. We started it early so that you can get there, come in, hang a spell. We're going to have a continental breakfast there this Saturday at 9 o'clock. And that's at 1020 North Taylor. That's Taylor and Delmar. One way to get there is Taylor and Delmar, easiest way for me, and that's 1020 North Taylor, Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Be there. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Yes, Liz, I have two public service announcements. The first one is that I regret that I can't remember the state, but it's a state that still believes that the citizens have the Constitution to fall back on, and we have human rights. The governor, which in my estimation is a hero, passed a law that no citizen in his state would have to be inserted with a microchip, and it will be a criminal offense for any person or entity to try to force that upon a human being. So it's the only state in the union that has done it so far. So maybe there is a little hope. So I can't think of the state, but I'm sure your listeners, audience who can have access to Googling can find out the name of the state, and I think it should be talked about every day, because that is the plan they have for us, is to put a microchip in each and every one of us. And for this governor to take that stance, that's a hero and gutsy.
Okay.
And I had one other thing that I wanted. Oh, yeah. There is a nincompoop that's trying to sue Michael Moore for $85 million because she said that Michael Moore portrayed him as being against the war. And if anybody has seen that movie, the people talk for themselves. He didn't pull anything out of them. They had used their own free will to decide what they wanted to say. And he did not do any talking in the movie. Everyone spoke for themselves. So we'll just have to see who's behind this. I know that a lot of people are out to get Michael Moore.
All right.
Thank you.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, please do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. You're on the wake-up call.
And you know, your last guest, I really enjoyed him, and I hoped also to listen to your program Monday on the Federal Reserve. But you never hear people mention on a behavior of Israel, especially back during the South African apartheid era, when the government of Israel helped the South African government to acquire nuclear weapons. Why do you think that there's not much more spoken against that? You think that there's the political influence of the, or maybe even the association of a biblical entity, you know, associating Israel today with Israel of a Bible? What is your reasoning for something like that?
I think that there are all kinds of all of those things and more. I great PR, moneyed influence, great lobby, all of that. All of that, and it's just it's interesting to me, just from a psychological view, just to hear people not bring apply to Israel the same logical things that you apply to other countries. You know, we can't trust this country. We shouldn't give them, they shouldn't have access to a nuclear weapon. And because it's baseless for them to think that somebody else is going to attack them. That's illogical.
Yeah, they deserve just as much ridicule as any other country.
Absolutely. If we get it, why wouldn't they get it as well? And the piece of it is that if having a nuclear weapon puts you in a position of superiority, and it does, why would you, if you have the money and the funds to get one, why wouldn't you want one?
Yes.
If your neighbors have them.
That's good sense.
You know, I mean, it's a justification for the Second Amendment, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Thank you very much. 454-0400 is my phone number. My name is Liz Brown. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow for 2 hours. We're going to have a black and brown discussion. We're going to talk about Central America, and we're going to talk about Africa. Akbar Muhammad is going to be my guest for 2 hours tomorrow. You don't want to miss a special guest from Zimbabwe. And from Cuba. Stay with me.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches.